Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Stuff works. All right. From the fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me department, I have repeatedly tested the phone system all day long. It works. It works. But hold your horses. Hold your horses. Don't dial yet. It works. And I've got enough bandwidth to send the program out, which is a double bonus. Hoo-ah! Huh. So there you go. This is a refresh. You know, you begin to take things for granted, like everything working. After a while, and I'm just pleased as pie. And when they don't work, you're reminded how nice it is when they do, and they work again. And it's only the middle of the week, and it will be tomorrow 2 weeks since everything has worked correctly. So. Well, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, so whatever it is you pray to, whomever, invisible creatures, Presbyterian gods, flying spaghetti monsters, Oprah, I don't care. Say a prayer that everything just works. Cool? Cool. It is the 17th day of November, and I have to tell you, that our little discussion, who knew? I guess the church is right that there's an interest in demonology that extends across all spectrums. After last night's little discussion about that little-known, but, oh, there was such hopes for him, that little-known demon from 1966, Azazel, whose 1967 freak injury with a projectile vomiting incident sidelined him for the season. The Reverbo and I went and did a little bit of further research because there was such interest in him. And it turns out that yes, Azazel was eventually sent down to the AA club in purgatory after the 1967 season, and never again had the year that he enjoyed in 1966. What it turns out is that in the 1968 season, he was actually traded to Shiva for an avatar to be named later, and it was, in fact, a sorry end to a promising career. Azazel was last seen coaching Pee Wee Possessions at a little tent revival in Tulsa, and he finally transmogrified off this mortal plane in 1989. Oddly enough, that was the same year that Dick Cheney became Secretary of Defense. Just saying. But there you go. So the story of Azazel brought to its completion. But it is Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. It's downhill to hump day. It is not just all that. No. While the technicians were working to get the phones going again and laying hands on them and speaking in tongues and prophesying at the T1 line, well, we were down in the fellowship hall trying to fight off the deacons for that last little piece of strawberry pie. You know, when you get to mid-November, strawberry pie becomes, that's of any quality, mind you, becomes a bit of a rarity. And the deacons get kind of possessive. But that's all over. That's all over. Because, brethren and sistren, hallelujah, glory, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And I am here to tell you, I am so pleased. I am so pleased through the booking efforts of horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. We have a guest minister of music this evening, and I think it will speak to you all. The elder Steve Martin, is with us to lead us in our offertory hymn. I remind you, as the plate passes around you, it is not nice to make change in the plate. Nor is nor does the Cathedral of Common Sense look at all fondly upon monopoly money being placed in the plate either. But as the plate goes around, just remember that it is your kind and loving giving that keeps the Cathedral of Common Sense on the air every Wednesday night. Brother Martin, if you please.
Little tune called Atheists Don't Have No Songs.
Christians have their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Papa Nagilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues. Romantics play Clair de Lune.
Clair de Lune.
Born again, sing He is Risen. But no one ever wrote a tune.
Wrote a tune.
For godless existentialism.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing
a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The He is always lowercase. The He is always lowercase.
Some folks sing
a Bach cantata.
Bach cantata.
Lutherans get Christmas trees. Atheist songs add up to nada.
Up to nada.
But they do have Sundays free.
Have Sundays free.
Pentecostals sing to heaven.
Sing to heaven.
Gothics have the Book of Scrolls. Numerologists count to seven. Atheists have rock and roll.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing
a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The He is always lowercase. The He is always lowercase.
Atheists don't have no songs.
Christians have their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Papa Nagilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues.
Catholics
dress up for Mass
and listen to
Gregorian chants.
Atheists
just take a pass.
Watch football in their underpants.
Atheists don't have no songs.
Don't have no songs.
Hallelujah, glory. Now quit standing around out there smoking in the parking lot with the heathens, you deacons, and get on in. Come through the vestibule. Don't bother with the little thin mints that have been sitting there for about 25 years. Come on down that blood red carpet, brethren and sisters, and fall on your knees down here at the altar and place your hands, brethren and sisters. Glory! Place your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of reason coursing through you from the server on high. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday in the Cathedral of Common Sense. I am Archpope, Rabbi, Bishop, Imam, Shaman Bob Kincaid, and we are here to celebrate and praise. Glory! Yes! Oh, brethren and sisters, we have a service for you this evening. Indeed. Our service this evening comes to you from, among other things, the book of Genesis, chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, if you will flip in your official King James versions, because we all know that the creator of the universe spoke Elizabethan English. Right. This is going to be, well, it's not as complex as it seems, but it is. We start with a little bit of audio. A little bit of audio for you from none other than the Beckerhead. The Beckerhead is concerned, apparently, about the European Union. And he is concerned about the European Union in conjunction with an old charlatan, a fraud, by the name of Rabbi Lapin, or Lapin. That would be French for rabbit, I do believe. Lapin. Rabbi Lapin. Rabbi Lapin is upset about a lot of things. One of the things he's upset about is apparently public transportation. Huh?
So, if let's just pick the story up. If you missed the story, if you missed the first half of the show, DVR the show, man. What are you thinking? The idea was this hunter of men started to erase God. He became king. He said, let's make people all like Britain.
Is it just me, or does the Beckerhead look a little more like Homer Simpson every day? Just ask.
It's all the same, not like stone. The mortar that will hold those bricks together is materialism.
Yes.
Okay? And we'll have this utopia.
And when you think you hear John say, cranberry sauce, it's actually, I buried Paul. Right.
Build a tower that will reach the heavens.
Yes, you will be able to fulfill your highest aspirations in that fashion.
We are all bricks.
And I urge people to read the...
Bricks? We're all bricks? Wait a minute. Did the Beckerhead say, we're all bricks? I think he did. I could just swear... like this?
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
I love that guitar. Here it is. I cannot help wondering. Did Roger Waters know that he was writing the anthem of the teabaggers when he penned that? We don't need no education. We don't, but they clearly do need some thought control because they get it for an hour a night from the Beckerhead. Now, what the hell was this about bricks?
Be able to fulfill your highest aspirations in that fashion.
We are all bricks.
And I urge people to read the story and to listen to us, not as if we're describing some long-forgotten historic event, but we're describing...
How about describing some long-forgotten, never-happened event? How about this is mythology? How about this is a means of... how about the Tower of Babel story is a means of... what am I looking for here? A means of expressing the angst and misgivings of illiterate... nomadic tribes who were following the sheep in a time when men were men and sheep were scared, and they were really nervous to see these cities rising up out of the plains between the two great rivers, Tigris and Euphrates. And they wondered to themselves, as these people settle down, what will happen to our grazing lands? What will happen to our flocks? What will happen to our nomadic, dirt-ignorant way of life? So they wrote a story about it that made it sound like civilization was a bad thing. How about we look at it that way, Glenn?
What's really happening today, and will happen in our grandchildren's generation.
Guess not.
In the world again.
It'll happen over and over again. Okay. So, now, tell me the happy ending, because I've always read the story, and God gets angry, and he comes...
Okay, so we got to back up. This is, What the Beckerhead is, and his rabbi buddy, and this guy understands. What's the word... since he just did a show about George Soros and accused George Soros as a teenager of turning his own people and sending them to the ovens. No, there really was a word for that. There was a word for Jewish people during the persecution in the Second World War and the Holocaust who turned their brothers and sisters over to the German authorities. What was the... Sonderkommando? Does that ring a bell? Well, that's what this Lappin is. He's an apologist. He gets mad at Jews who aren't sufficiently wingnut. He's one of those people who will gladly, if that time ever comes where Jesus comes down in his holy rolls and he's got his sword and Rabbi Lappin's one of those people who will be bringing people up and going, this is another one of my people. Put him to the sword, Jesus! Put him to the sword! He's one of those. But what they're upset about is apparently, and it's a real struggle to understand, but what they're apparently upset about, especially the Beckerhead, is the EU Parliament building in Strasbourg, France. He doesn't like how it looks. Now, on a number of occasions, I've talked about visual things on this program, and I've said that it's a matter of dancing about architecture because there's sort of a disconnect. Well, I acknowledge but now the fundies and the teabaggers are literally after architecture. I got another architecture story. There's not just this one. The fundies are all het up. But do you know what the EU building is? Well, let's let Glenn Beck tell you. Because you'll never mend in a million years now. You won't.
I'm going to start where I began tonight. Bring up the EU Parliament building. Love this. Huh?
Love
EU
this.
Building, isn't it? Look at that. Now, let me go back to the Tower of Babel. Put the Tower of Babel back up. Here's the Tower of Babel. Here you see it's unfinished.
Okay, this is just between us and there. There aren't any little drop-dead stupid fundamentalists listening. What he has on the screen is, if I'm not mistaken, an imagining, a 16th century imagining of the Tower of Babel by one Peter Bruegel, or Bruegel. You're welcome. Bless you. Whatever. It is a 16th century, for all intents and purposes, a 16th century cartoon. That's what painting was in that era.
There are no pictures of the Tower of Babel!
Primarily, that's because there was no Tower of Babel.
Even the book that he's relying on doesn't say Tower of Babel. It says Tower in the City.
Not that it makes much difference, it's all imaginary bullshit anyway. It just is. But that's not going to slow the Beckerhead down because he knows he's talking to an audience with the collective average IQ of the price per pound of bananas. And so he's showing... He's showing Emery and Eileen and Clyde and Marveline. Marveline, come here, he's got that picture of the Tower of Babel. I didn't even know they could take pictures back then. And this one's in color.
I thought they started out with black and white, like in Civil War pictures, by that grandfather of the Brady Bunch. This one's in color, Marveline. Come see it. I think it's a Merkel.
Doorway over here, pretty amazing. Put them side by side, please.
And there's some shrubberies and a two-level a path in the middle with a two-level effect. And show them side by side. Dear Jesus.
Coincidence? Well, there's no word in Hebrew for coincidence, Glenn. So
And I don't know. Is there a word in Hebrew for utter bullshit? I don't know. Is it coincidence? Is it coincidence that an imaginary cartoon made up by a painter in Holland in the 15th or 16th century just happens to not really look like, but Glenn Beck is going to sort of pretend that it does, the EU Parliament building? Is that just coincidence?
To reject the coincidence theory.
This is amazing. If you look at the unfinished doorway here, the doorway here, the little doorways up here, the doorway here.
You know, they've got a lot of high-tech gizmodery there at Radio Rwanda. Why not just slide them together and do an overlay if they're so similar? Well, the reason for that is, if you did the overlay, it would be an overlay of an imaginary cartoon of a building that was painted by a 15th century Dutchman or a German, I don't know, or Austrian. Who cares? Laid over a piece of architecture from the 21st century made of structural steel, but you know, who the hell am I?
You have these, what would you call these?
Vertical buttresses.
Buttresses.
There they are.
Which are all right here.
Buttresses. Flying buttresses. Humankind will not see those until they'll make their first manifestations in a very small form in the Roman Empire. And then they won't really get out in common circulation until you get the cathedral building frenzy of the Middle Ages and early Renaissance, in which the buttresses become known as flying buttresses. And a flying buttress is what the Becker head is pointing to. But it's proof that the EU is building the Tower of Babel right.
It's unfinished. I mean, the same angle.
Yeah, the photograph was taken from the same angle that the painting was imagined. Imagine that.
And how it steps down, all the unfinished work in both pictures.
Right.
Imagine that, a structure with steps. Steps, I tell you, steps! It's a sign of the apocalypse, steps! Not ladders, steps! Not chutes, steps! Oh, Glenn Beck is on to something here. Personally, I think it's bad acid, but who am I?
In the same direction, both from right to left. Strange.
So now, you're not saying, Rabbi, you're not saying that they intentionally are building the Tower of Babel.
I think they are. I really do.
He is saying it. We're going to get through this. I promise you we are. This would be funny. This would be freaking hilarious if it weren't for all the Clydes and Arleys and Emerys and Eileens out there who are now convinced that, what's next? I don't know what went on today. This is from yesterday. This is where the Antichrist will make his first speech. What? But, anyway.
Do you believe and was told that the design of the headquarters of the European Parliament in Strasbourg, France, was, the designers were asked to make it resemble the Tower of
Babel?
They
said, because we called it, we tried to verify, and what they say is they're just reflecting like the Colosseum.
Yeah, that's what we want to build in Europe, right?
The architectural design is loosely based on the ideas of the Roman amphitheaters that were built all over Greece, up into Macedonia, over into Hungary, southern France, Spain, North Africa. Why? Because they were engineering marvels that to this day stand as bulwarks of design, but not for the Beckerhead and his right-wing rabbi pal, Rabbi Labbit. Rabbi Rabbit. Rabbi Rabbit! Oh, dear God.
Place where Christians got fed to lions. That's
so it doesn't really make it.
Right.
Okay, so we got to back up for just a minute. Just a couple of seconds.
Right, a place where Christians got fed to lions.
Oops, only oops. If you study your ancient Roman history, which I am prone to do, I'm quite the geek, you will find that no. And I remember as a teenager, when we traveled over there, we went to the Flavian Amphitheater, and we also went to the ruins of the Circus Maximus. And of course, we had a bunch of kids from Catholic school, a Catholic school named Weirton Madonna, oddly enough, in Weirton, West Virginia. And they were all hooting and hollering. I mean, these kids were real heathens. It made us little good southern Alabama public school kids just feel like we were way, way, way behind the misbehaving juvenile delinquency curve. Because, I mean, these kids were out of hand. And so we're driving by the Flavian Amphitheater, and they're all screaming, "Oh, look, that's where the Christians got fed to the lions!" You know, just like Rabbi Rabbit did here. And we were politely informed by every Latin teacher on the bus, no! Not to mention the tour guide, no! The Christians got fun, the sport with the Christians was heading the Circus Maximus, not in the Flavian Amphitheater. Because the Flavian Amphitheater wasn't built at the right time, just saying. But that's okay! Because Clyde Gnarly and Emery and Eileen are all just watching the Beckerhead and Rabbi Rabbit and getting their bigotries confirmed.
Doesn't really make it any. It really doesn't make it any better.
God bless you, Media Matters for America. So to review, we have. Okay, oh, by the way, an update from Jim. Sonder Commando kept the ovens going. The others were Capos and Quislings. Well, yeah, Rabbi Rabbit would be a Quisling then, I suppose, a Capo. You know he would. Because he's doing that to his own people now by supporting the people who hope to someday get to kill them when Jesus comes back in his holy rules. You know, it's fascinating. According to right-wing fundamentalist clowns like the Beckerhead, all progress of humankind came from religion. And therefore, everybody else is sort of glomming on the progress makers and they're therefore some sort of parasites or vermin. I've heard Michael Savage use the word vermin. Vermin! So let's go to the Holy Book and do a little rooting around. We're going to Genesis 11, 1 through 9. As noted before, King James Version. And the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Amen and amen. And they said to one another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And yea, verily, every man, woman, and child with a post-nasal drip was called unto the building site to provide slime for the mortar. Yea, verily, and there was much phlegm and much rejoicing. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven. Time. when you're in a place that's really, really flat and featureless and there aren't anything, there's nothing of any real height around you, 50 feet up is unto heaven. No, really, it is. Because you got nothing to compare it to for scale. And let us make us a name. I'm sorry, King James English sounds like hillbilly. Let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord come down to see the city and the tower. He's almighty, but he has to come there to see it. He can't just, like, put on his, I don't know, put his rocks on, rock eyeglasses and stare into his hat with his seeing stones like the Mormons do. Mormons just got it all over the almighty. No, he has to come down to see the city and the tower. Because he's all-powerful, but he's apparently limited by space and light and time, and which the children built. Children. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one. I told you, God speaks hillbilly. The people is one. And they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. You build a three-story structure and God gets mad. You know, I've said before, the Almighty is a juvenile delinquent in the Old Testament. He is. He's that guy that looks a lot like Liberace who was in the one Star Trek episode. Who turned out to be a juvenile delinquent who was torturing Kirk and the crew. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to! Let us go down! I guess this is the royal we. God is some sort of English queen. Let us go down! That sounds like a snippet of dialogue between Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. Let us go down! And there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad, from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. You know, it's really kind of fascinating when you read something like this. If you don't take it literally, and if you buy into some of that Jungian archetypal theorizing that C.G. Jung did, you can see that there's a sort of race memory going on in this story. Because as Rabbi Rabbit explains on the Beckerhead program, some people think this has to do with a king named Nimrod. Josephus says that it had to do with Nimrod. Now, it was Nimrod who excited them to such an affront and contempt of God. He was the grandson of Ham, the son of Noah. Josephus' timeline is a little bit off because Nimrod actually ruled in, what, the 7th century BCE? Yeah. But then there's people who think it's a reference to the building by Nabopolassar, or perhaps Nebuchadnezzar II. What it is, though, is that these buildings were very common through the Akkadian plain. They were called ziggurats, and they were great towers. And they were sort of a mud-brick expression of the concept of the pyramid. The Tower of Babel is frequently thought to have been actually a reference to something called the Etamenanki, a ziggurat at Babylon. And it's a stepped tower, big square building with a smaller square building on top, smaller square building, and zigzag steps going all the way up, royal residence, temple, and again in a flat and featureless plain, awfully dadgum handy for seeing the marauding hordes coming at you with enough distance between you and them to allow you to get the gates shut. It's practical, right? This is a temple in Babylon that may have been dedicated to Marduk, their god.
6th century B.C., Nabopolassar and Nebuchadnezzar II rebuilt it. Alexander tore it down and then tried to rebuild it and then wound up just tearing it all down and moved all the tiles to another location. Shh, you can see it on Google Earth. No, really. But now there's some there really is some fascinating stuff in here, because the people who wrote Genesis were much better plagiarists than they were original writers, because there's a similar story that comes out of much older Akkadian literature, you know, the Epic of Gilgamesh and all of that stuff. Now, you might find it interesting to note, we talked about Peter Bruegel's painting. You know what Peter Bruegel's painting is based on? Flavian Amphitheater, Rome. 1563, by the way. But it is interesting because there are several references in the early parts of the Old Testament scripture. There are several references that make it clear that this nomadic people who were terrified about the end of their lifestyle as they knew it, you know, men, sheep, scared, the polygamous wandering around, going on whoever's land that they wanted to, drinking from whomever's wells that they wanted to, basically just sort of wandering around. They were very, very nervous about the rise of civilization. They were nervous about the rise of sedentary culture. They were nervous about staying in one place. And they were nervous about it because they didn't know if they could cope with it. They didn't know if they would continue to be a people as civilization crept in around them. So there's a story, the story about Cain and Abel, where Abel comes to give his sacrifice to the Lord, and he smokes a pork shoulder or a lamb shank or something, and the smell of burning flesh is apparently pleasing to the nostrils of the Almighty. And who doesn't love the smell of good barbecue? I mean, really. And then Cain comes along, and he's got some cucumbers that he's raised, and he's got some sheaves of wheat, and he's got a couple of onions and maybe a turnip or a rutabaga or some celery. And he puts them all on the altar and says, "Well, yea, verily, Lord, with a good barbecue, you gotta have some greens." And God is not pleased, because God apparently only likes the smell of burning flesh. Big meat eater, the Yahweh. And God rejects Cain's offering, instead opting for that which has been hunted and gathered by Abel. And Cain slays Abel. Cain kills Abel as a metaphor, because it's metaphor, not history, as a metaphor for the resistance of hunter-gatherers to being settled down in sedentary agrarian culture. The authors of Genesis are saying that they resisted till the absolute last minute joining civilization, and that they think God was really proud of them for it. And then you get the same thing. Repeated in this tower story. That any civilization that has the power to bring its people together and understand themselves, because see, these wandering tribes, they couldn't understand other people. They were absolutely fascinated that there would be 15,000 people who all spoke the same language.
They couldn't understand. Good God, there weren't 500 of them who understood the same language, let alone why it rained, or whether the sun was going to come up in the west or the south-southeast tomorrow morning. They just weren't real sharp. They were very, very primitive people. Because some of these things you only get when you settle down and stay in one place and get to observe the seasons and observe the natural world around you. If you're a hunter-gatherer, you know, things start blooming, you go, okay, well, it's time to go around looking for roots and berries again. Wonder where we are. Doesn't matter. Well, you can't have civilization like that. You just can't. So the early parts of the Bible are just full of that crap. But by the way, you know, never examine a story that Beck tells about the Bible without asking yourself, what does this have to do with his really bizarre Mormonism? Because Mormonism is just really bizarre. There's no normal Mormonism. There's no mainstream Mormonism. There's no not weird Mormonism, because it's all predicated on a guy who used rocks to look into a hat to translate imaginary golden plates in the 19th century A.D. Whew, mother. Well, guess what? If you look into the mythos world in the Book of Mormon, in the Book of Ether, no, really, the Book of Ether. Good shit. If you read the Book of Ether in the Book of Mormon, you will find the story of a dude named Jared, who did not just run in the New York City Marathon and has not lost a bunch of pounds eating Subway sandwiches. Totally different Jared. But you'll find the story of Jared. And Jared is a sort of reimagining of the Aeneas story, because Joseph Smith never had an original idea in his life. Every story he wrote, it's kind of like Genesis. There's nothing original in Genesis. They ripped off the previous storytellers, like the Epic of Gilgamesh. There's nothing original in the Book of Mormon. And the story of Jared is a retelling of Aeneas. Aeneas gets a warning that all hell is about to break loose, and the Achaeans, are otherwise known as the Greeks, the Hellenes, are about to wipe out fabled Troy. And so Aeneas carries his old crippled daddy on his back and escapes from Troy before the boys can get loose from the hollow horse. And he has many journeys and many travails, but he winds up some little hills next to the Tiber River on the Boot Heel Peninsula in the Mediterranean. And thus is Rome founded. And that all ties in with the Romulus and the Remus and yada, yada, yada. No, not that. No, not Uncle Remus. Damn it, stop. So there's a retelling of the Aeneas story in the Book of Ether. Oh, wow. Ether. I didn't tell the poor bastard about the bats. He'd be seeing them soon enough. The Book of Ether in the Book of Mormon tells the story of Jared, who is warned by God, just like Aeneas was, and he bugs out of where? Oh! The Tower of Babel. Do you understand that everything we object to, you know, all the anti-Semitism, all the eliminationism, all of that stuff is window dressing for what Glenn Beck's program really is? It's Introduction to Mormon 101.
And so Clyde and Arlie and Emery and Eileen are not even, they have no idea that they're being indoctrinated into the ways of Mormonism. But they are. Because there is a spin on every single Old Testament story by the Mormons. And if anybody on this planet has plans for global religious domination, it ain't Islam. It's the Mormons. With their storehouses and their seeds and their buying of gold and their control of... Eesh, poof, ah. So, to recap, the Beckerhead has a picture painted by a Dutchman in the 16th century that's based on the Flavian Amphitheater at Rome, which he claims is a picture of the real Tower of Babel, and then uses to introduce the poor, ignorant, little, dirt-stupid people who listen to him to Mormon doctrine. To Mormon doctrine. And guess what? The cute little boys with the nice haircuts and the black pants and the white shirts and the skinny black ties on the bicycles, peddling all over the world as we speak, every one of them knows this crap. And they will try, and they will try, and they will try, and they will hustle and hustle and hustle. And they might get one convert out of 10,000, but that's enough for them. Because then the doctrine says that thou shalt go and breed like... We're back to rabbits again, aren't we? Stunning, isn't it? Mind-boggling. But it's the absolute truth. These are factual things. These are not imaginings. This is, you know, I didn't have to play anything backwards to get this. All you have to do is know a little bit of real factual reality, and you can make all of this, you can understand what's going on. But it doesn't matter if you don't take what the understanding is and tell other people and kind of wake them up. And give them chapter and verse. Don't sit back and listen to the right-wing BS and say, well, you know, we have a difference of opinion. They have to be opposed. It's the same thing with radio. The reason that we are in the media landscape that we are has to do with the fact that for, you know, what, 20, 30 years, liberals sat back and said, well, we don't want to be like that Limbaugh fellow. He's just crass. Pass me another Lark's Vomit canapé. And no one refuted him. And so most of what he says has passed into the common parlance and the national consciousness. Feminazi? Tree hugger? Liberals! Yeah. You know, the Beckerhead says, this is amazing. And it is amazing. It's amazing that this kind of charlatan hucksterism can be foisted off on a people so godforsaken gullible that they're willing to buy into it. But apparently they are. So that's where we start tonight. It is by no means where we finish. Oh no. There is one other little sort of tied-in story here. We go to Arizona. And again, I guess the theme is dangerous architecture. The teabaggers have run out of living, breathing people, and now they're mad at the architecture. You can see it from the side of the road near 19th Avenue along Interstate 10 in Phoenix. It's apparently, it's just nothing but skeleton, the crossbeam members and steel and so forth, and it looks like there's definitely a dome going up. Oh, can't have a dome. If Jerry Jones didn't build it, the dome must therefore be Muslim! People, right-wingers, teabaggers, the kinds of freaks that apparently scurry around in the desert out there, are flipping out! Just like they flipped out about mosques in Tennessee and Texas and California, and even one that isn't a mosque in New York. Phoenix, Arizona, right-wing, teabagging asshats are bugging the hell out over a skeleton dome rising from the desert. The people building the building say they've gotten calls from concerned neighbors who have... Are you building one of them there mosques? I don't want no mosque in my beloved upstanding Christian Phoenix. I don't want no mosque. Don't you be building no mosque. It's got a dome. It's got to be a mosque. It got so bad that the people building this thing had to put up a great big giant banner with great big giant letters on it that little teabaggers could stand still and move their little fingers in the air and let their lips move while they read, because that's the only way that teabaggers can read, because that's how goddamn dumb they are. And it says, if you think different, you are wrong. Oh, Mr. Orwell, we are building a Christian house of prayer. And this is where they did not help themselves, luzdelmundo.net. Oh, they say it's a church, but they named it in Spanish, and that's probably a Spanish translation of something that Mohammed done wrote. And they give their number, so you can call and find out that it's not a mosque, but it's Luz del Mundo, and that means it'll be a crawling with them illegals. This probably a sanctuary, and they got that dome up there so they can hang upside down by their ankles. They do that, you know. I done seen that Men in Black movie, and it starts with an arrest of illegal aliens. Me and Marvelline didn't sleep for a week. Angry at architecture. Don't take my word for it.
Well, a new church under construction is changing the Phoenix skyline and also forcing the congregation to have to tell people they are not Muslim. As Andy Harvey reports, the controversy stems from an architectural feature that is causing some confusion.
Just off of Phoenix's busy I-10... rises a dome that's catching plenty of attention. For the past year, the La Luz del Mundo Church has been building its new facility. But when the dome appeared recently, the backlash began.
I heard many people came over and they say, is this a Muslim temple? No, it's not.
Now, see, the guy who's saying no, it's not, that's Juan Calixto. And that ain't no fine Irish name.
In fact, it's Christian. The church hung a banner for passers-by that reads, if you think different, you are wrong. We are building a Christian house of prayer.
It is amazing that people would have such a backlash over a building structure.
The Council on American Islamic Relations of Arizona says it's sad people have fear and misconceptions about Muslims.
It is unfortunate that people are so intolerant to differences that they're not willing to even see that the place of worship is that it's not a mosque.
The church is being built entirely by volunteers, most of them church members. And once it's completed, it'll be a new place of worship for the nearly 800 church members.
This is a pretty big structure. It's going to be a capacity for we're thinking about.
Now he's Uziel Martinez. Wait a minute. Uziel? Isn't that one of them demon names we were talking about just last night?
2,000 people.
An uproar based on an incorrect assumption.
I do think there is a hysteria.
There's only one problem with that Uziel thing. My great-grandfather's name was Ozias.
Same name! Different interpretation of the Hebrew.
I think Islamophobia is very rapid, and I think the best way to get rid of it is to get to know your neighbors.
In Phoenix, Andy Harvey, 12 New...
No, but see, that's how...
Well, a new church under construction is changing...
I don't want to hear that no more. But see, that's how they operate. That they're Luz del Mundo. That they're Luz del Mundo. What they'll do is they'll build it, and then they'll sell it to the Muslims. Mm-hmm. Yep. Uziel played second base. Played second base for the Sodom Succubi. Yep. Had a long career, Uziel did. There was that famous combination, Uziel to Azeroth to Beelzebub, and out you go. To hell with you. Angry at architecture. Let that sit in. The teabaggers are now angry at architecture. Have we seen this movie before? Yes! Why, yes, as a matter of fact, we have. The magnificent glories that were the Forum of ancient Rome and the Agora of ancient Athens were dismantled wholesale by, once again, fundamentalist Christians who were, what? Angry at architecture. There are moments when it's hard not to just look up and say, we're screwed. But that's the way it is with fundamentalist Christians. They destroy everything they touch. They destroyed the Agora in Alexandria and the library and the Museion. They destroyed the Acropolis in Athens, except for the parts that the Turks did. And, well, actually, it was the Greeks. They were the ones storing the gunpowder there, I think. They destroyed most of ancient Rome. The place where Caesar was murdered is nothing. We don't really know where it was, because it was torn down by the Christians. But it's that way. Oh, and by the way, now the fundamentalists talk about attacking your institutions. And we can get to this. Remind me. If Rush can do that, I can too. Now the fundamentalists are attacking one of America's greatest 21st century institutions. Just got a note reminding me of this story from our buddy Dennis in Kentucky. Damn Republicans destroy everything they touch. Now they've destroyed Dancing with the Stars. Dennis says, back in my misspent youth, I was a pretty fair ballroom dancer, so I really enjoyed watching the dancing. Now the repukes are trying to steal that vote, too. And it's true, they are. We can get into it later in the program. There's no blessed end to the destructive nature of fundamentalist Christians who are, by definition, also teabaggers. So, that's enough about me. Let's talk about you. You know the numbers. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Well, I tried to make it Sundays, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Mondays, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Well, I keep on thinking about you, Sister Golden Hair Surprise, and I just can't live without you. Can't you see it in
Means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
And by the way, for those of you who didn't know, Uziel the Ashtaroth of Beelzebub was the absolute toughest, baddest double possession play combination in the entire Dead Sea League. You can look it up. As the late, great James Thurber might have said. We are into the second hour of the program. It's about 4 minutes past the hour. Thanks for your patience. And, I don't know if I have ever said this with more joy in my heart. It's time to go to the phones.
as long as no smoke comes out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
It works, Sandra.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know that. You sounded hella frustrated yesterday. I felt for you.
Oh, I was about to eat my own hair.
I know, I can imagine. I know, it's like, what in the world? Well, I didn't realize that Verizon just sort of said to hell with the whole state because it wasn't a big enough profit center. I mean, see, this is, I mean, it's just a good example of being left at the tender mercies of these multinationals. How's that working out?
Yeah, see, that business about how the corporations will always do the best thing for the people because that's right. Just how corporate... No, it doesn't work.
You know, it's BS always on so many areas because, you know, the whole Internet thing has more of a common feel about it than... It's like a utility, you know?
Well, yeah, it does.
And so, you know, and it's just sort of disgusting. And it's just sort of like, what mechanism do you guys have in the state to deal with those types of contracts? I mean, isn't there a regulator in Virginia for telecommunications?
Oh, yeah, the Public Service Commission?
Right.
Sure.
So what's the deal with that? Well, I mean... They don't have any sort of mechanisms to.
Oh no, there were all kinds of hearings and briefs and counter briefs and rebuttals and sir rebuttals and everybody who knew anything about telephony in West Virginia said, Jesus, please don't let them dump that. Don't let them. And the Public Service Commission, who are without fail creatures, you know, they come to the Public Service Commission from having been lawyers for utilities and stuff like that. They listened patiently to all of the objections and said, Verizon gets to do what Verizon wants to do.
Unbelievable.
Well, no, but then it gets even funner because we were supposed to get a bunch of, like, $47 million, $120 million. We're talking about monopoly money here in stimulus monies to build up Internet infrastructure in West Virginia.
Right.
Because it's hard to do here because we don't have a lot of concentrated population centers. It's a very rural state.
No, I mean, that was my next question. Well, then, you have to appeal to the...
So the stimulus money for Internet infrastructure gets given to West Virginia, and it really is. It's some embarrassingly horse-gagging large load of money. And Joe Manchin, as governor, said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to give it all to Frontier. Here you go, boys. Here's your big Happy Gilmore golf check. And so, meanwhile, the other providers like CityNet, who is really on top of stuff, I mean, these guys are awesome.
Well, no,
I mean, we've had problems and stuff, but they've worked tirelessly to sort this thing out. I can't tell you the number of hours I've been on the phone with them, Sandra.
So they didn't get any of the funds at all? He just gave it to one corporation? Wow. I mean, it's really no point to even have elected officials anymore. And because he got rewarded with a Senate seat, from what I can tell.
Right, where he has announced that he will use his powers to, and this is, you know, this is a quote from the news story that I was on about last night, defend the coal industry.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, it's just sort of stunning. It's like, wow, they really need to be defended. I'm so sick of hearing about these powerful interests needing the constant coddling. Case in point, they're now trying to suggest tying in fucking unemployment insurance with got to extend these tax cuts for the rich. Have you heard this?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, my mouth dropped. I thought, oh, dear God.
See, I would like to tie in with extending the tax cuts for the rich. How about we don't burn your houses down and slit your throats? That's just me being mean and sort of over the top. But the rich never understand how precariously perched they are, Sandra. What happens when the 99ers, you know, how many, every month a new crop of 99ers comes online?
Well, no, it's just, and they're more than happy to kind of cut loose millions of people. We're not, I'm not being, you know, it's not hyperbole here. We are talking about millions of people, but to be insulted and stomped on with some sort of idea like that just makes me sick. And breaking news, the White House has decided to meet with the Democrats after the Republicans told them, oh, no, we can't meet with you. Can we have another date? I mean, how humiliating and disgusting will it get?
That's the key. That's the key question, Sandra. How humiliating is it when the President of the United States calls you and you, Mitch McConnell, tell the President of the United States, I'm sorry, I'm washing my hair that day?
Not only that, but then, you know, you decide, oh, look, well, maybe I can have a meeting with the Democrats, and then you're shuffling to make sure that it was just to let everyone know it was just a change in date for the Republicans. But I say the Republicans will be there because Obama will be there.
No, the Republicans won't, because there's apparently, at least the conventional wisdom on this, is that they are pissed off. They're still pissed off about January 2009.
Well, no, I'm saying the Republicans will be represented, though.
Oh.
By Obama.
Because
he will negotiate with himself.
Yeah.
In order to represent.
He'll be bipartisan with himself.
I mean, it's just kind of, I was looking at that and thinking, how much more humiliation is this going to, it's just incredible to watch. I mean, another thing is like, hello, the freaking Star Treaty. How is this resting on one pig, Kyle? I'm sorry, I'm just so...
Well, no, I mean, the Start Treaty, look what happened to pay equity for women today.
Oh, I know, I saw that too, you know, but it's just, all of it is just real. Although one headline did sort of make me laugh, you know, because I am like that, was the Soros combo. Well, shit, start giving your money to somebody else if he ain't working out. And I'm thinking, Glenn Beck, he better wipe that chalkboard. Start wiping.
Well, who's got? I'm just curious. Who's got more money, Rupert or George?
Oh, George is—he's like, you know—he is sort of the evil financier who destroys currencies around the world. You know what I'm saying? He's the one that made $1 billion off of the devaluation of the pound.
Good work if you can get it.
Right. So he ain't no joke. The sort of hatred that he inspires among the right, I mean, I'm not too sure. I don't really understand that antipathy there. I don't know what's going on with that. But he definitely sort of, they definitely are reporting these little stories about the sort of dissatisfaction with Obama. It keeps popping up. Have you noticed?
Yeah,
and the quarters are interesting where they're popping up too. That's the thing. I'm like, ooh, shit. And so they're trying to backtrack, and the White House isn't commenting, you know. But I just think that, you know, a lot of people are just not happy. You know, it's like, wow, you know, every time I look on the computer, it's some new, humiliation. It's just every day. And this meeting thing is really doing my head in, because it's like, oh, what? Now you're going to meet with your Democratic Party?
Well, isn't it beans and Kool-Aid all over again?
Well, it's just sort of like, you know, and the thing is, it was an interesting article in the San Francisco Chronicle talking about how Pelosi is now at odds with Obama because her party is a lot more liberal. And I'm like, why is that? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and see, I had just before the show, I had, this is one of those, you know, Bob's family moments. I have to go up at about 5:30 and pick up my son from wrestling practice. And so that gives me a few minutes to listen to the mainstream news reporting on NPR.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this story being, the story of the minority leader election today in the House. And, you know, Heath Shuler, so-called blue dog, my word for it, mugwump, Heath Shuler ran for minority leader and got 40 votes. But what was interesting out of the story, Sandra, was that NPR reported it thusly. And Heath Shuler, he got 40 votes. And this is the next phrase. And that shows the profound level of discontent within the Democratic minority in the House. Huh?
He got 40 votes out of all the rest of them?
Yeah, he got 40 votes, and that shows that Nancy Pelosi's in trouble.
Oh, no, so that's just the media, no matter what. Listen, the Democratic Party, has we know they lost, but what the media never want to comment is that now it's much more progressive and liberal and much more to the liking of Nancy Pelosi, which is why she got reelected. Yeah, there's some discourse and some people don't like her, but they're not going to elect a blue dog to lead them. Why the hell would they? You see what I'm saying? It's just the media won't operate, as Axelrod said, in the world as it is. And the way the world as it is that the Democratic Party right now is a lot more liberal because all the blue dogs and the fake Democrats got beat. And we'll never hear that discussed in open. And it's just like, what is this? And so now Obama's going to be at open warfare, I guess, with his party because he's a fucking corporatist Republican.
Well, you know, it's a lot, historically, Sandra, it's a lot easier for Democratic presidents to fight with their own party than to actually stand up to the opposition. You know, Jesus Christ, I go back to Ben Nelson, the lone Democrat who voted to make it 41-58, not to close debate on this act that would have provided a modicum of pay equity for working women in this country.
Right.
You know, forgive me if that prompts me to ask, just changing the names for a minute, what's the matter with Nebraska?
He's the same one that's going on about, oh, I can't vote for unemployment extension if it's not paid for.
Right.
This is never discussed about this $700 billion for this tax increase. They never ask for that to be paid for, Bob.
No, they don't. And can we put something to bed, please, Sandra? Can we put to bed this notion that Olympia Snow and Susan Collins are Republican moderates? Because they voted against the Paycheck Fairness Act today.
It's a joke. I mean, the constant pandering to them bitches is never ending, especially from Obama. I'm just like, and the other bitch will be joining them from Alaska. I see she won.
Oh yeah, the apparently Alaskans can spell Murkowski.
Well, no. I mean, it's funny that she won. I can't even believe I'm glad. She's horrible. But what we were looking forward to was even worse—a straight up boot fascist. And I'm so glad he didn't win. You know.
You tend to say, you know, thank goodness.
But she's horrible.
But though. She's not. But that's yeah.
She's a senator from Exxon, so I'm just like, yikes.
Yeah, well, that's what it is the difference between the senator from Exxon and the senator from the Alaska Independence Party.
Or the East German Stasi, from what I can tell.
Yeah, Joe Miller's a creep.
No, but
I mean, when it gets to the point that litigation, you know, at one point he was a magistrate, a federal magistrate in Alaska. And there was litigation surrounding him, and the federal judge who was hearing the case recused himself and actually put in writing, I cannot hear this case in an unbiased fashion as a judge because of the profound dislike and disregard that I have for Mr. Miller. When judges are putting that kind of stuff in writing...
That's deep. Was he in Skull and Bones? I know he went to Yale. I mean, you never know, was he?
You know, I think he's too recherché for Skull and Bones.
He's probably not yet. Okay, but I was just like, sort of, you know, spun out that he was from that lot, too. It's like, yikes. He was just such bad news, that guy. I mean, I don't know if he's going to go away, but...
But how can you be a Yale grad and campaign on the idea that you're just a regular Joe?
You had that, wasn't that McHale guy from Illinois, that other Nazi? He went to Yale, too, Bob.
Jesus, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, listen, let's not. I mean, you know, you start, yeah, the Ivy League produces all sorts of folks.
I mean, I know, you know, you mentioned the START Treaty, Sandra, and I saw that, and it kind of made me go, ugh. But, and I guess it's just because of Well, maybe it's just because of how I view this nation and this world. But I really stood on my head over this Paycheck Fairness Act. My God, that piece of legislation cleared the House of Representatives 2 years ago, Sandra. 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's been languishing until now in the Senate of the United States under the bold and dynamic leadership of Harry Reid.
Right. I mean, what was stopping him from taking care of this 6 months ago, Bob? That's my question. Do you know?
No, I don't.
Is that your question too?
It is because it's the facts behind the bill that make me crazy. As we speak, every time a male in this country earns a dollar, a woman earns 77 cents. That's $10,000 in lost wages per year for the average female worker. If you're a woman of color, you earn 61% less. If you are a Latina, you earn 52 cents for every dollar a white non-Hispanic man earns. And that's okay?
Yep.
That's just free market economics? That's just the dynamic of what?
Right. I mean, it's the same thing as that cocaine discrepancy thing. It's like, oh, looky, now it's 18 to 1. Why is it 18 to 1? It was 100, and we're supposed to be happy that now it's 18. You see what I'm saying?
So yeah.
The disparity is still there. It's been reduced, and so niggas sit down and shut up. Same thing for women. You got the Ledbetter law, so sit down and shut up, right?
And the thing that just goes through me, A, Ben Nelson, B, the fact that even in this lame duck session, what a great strategic time to really, really put the wood to the Republican Party. You pick up the phone, you call Joe Biden. Joe, you might want to be over here today. We're going to have a vote, and we're going to use the Bill Frist nuclear option, and we're going to take these dumb bastards' rights to filibuster. Because you know what? Those two pieces of legislation, the START Treaty and the Pay Equity Act, are so fundamental, one, to the continued successful habitation of the planet by humans, and B, to any concept of fairness that we have in the United States, that those two things are worth breaking the filibuster over.
Well, and I mean, apparently the START Treaty, you know, they're making some noise about having found some way. I mean, it's just incredible because this is so important to continue reducing these nuclear stockpiles. I mean, and it's just crazy. I don't even understand how the Senate is working these days.
Well, the answer, the quick and dirty answer to that question, Sandra, is that the Senate is not working these days.
Yeah.
It is the single most dysfunctional institutional body in the United States.
I have to say, I was a bit taken aback by the START Treaty thing, because I had been following and thinking, oh, yeah, well, this is something that's worthwhile.
Yeah, this is easy, right? You looked at it, oh, this is easy.
And it's straightforward. It's definitely bipartisan. And all of a sudden, oh, I have some problems with it. It's just like, you know what? It just made me sick. Hey, listen, please explain to me, what's the deal with this cancer guy swearing allegiance to Israel and saying we'll be a check against the president? Why isn't this person arrested or out of the Congress?
I saw that, and it's...
No, he said, we will, we promise to be a check against the president on the behalf of Israel. That's basically, and it's just like...
Well, at that point, aren't you admitting that you're in the pay or in working for a foreign power?
No, this is the so-called, one of the second in charge of one whole branch.
Yeah, this is Eric Cantor. Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, hello?
The Britney Spears fan.
Right, and it's just sort of what? Has he backpedaled at all on this, or is it just...
I haven't seen anywhere that he was called upon to backpedal.
And I think this ties into this idea that it's okay to treat this president like shit because he's black. I'm sorry to keep going back there, but there's no way in the hell they would do this to Clinton, God knows Bush, Reagan, none of them. But it's okay to do this to him?
Well, right, but exactly. And the other thing that makes me nuts, though, is that it's not like the president is being hard on Israel. Did you see this headline from a couple of days ago? U.S. offers Israel warplanes in return for new settlement freeze?
Listen.
No, wait, Sandra. Because this is coming out of Haaretz. This isn't out of the New York Times.
Okay, so it's sort of like...
The Obama administration promised 20 brand spanking new F-30, you know, no F-15s, no F-17, 20 brand spanking new F-35 fighter planes that are handy and dandy for the bombing men, women, children, beasts of the field, things that creep and crawl, as long as they're in Gaza.
If they do what do they have to do?
This is right up there with Mangoes for India.
If they do what?
If they engage in a 90-day West Bank building moratorium. Not a general moratorium, just 90 days.
Wait a minute.
90 days, same as cash.
I don't want to... Are you kidding me? Listen, why not try the other tack? We will cut the A from you if you don't. Why are they giving them stuff?
Because...
Because
they have a perception... that they are ugly children. This is the old joke about, you know, you so ugly when you was a kid, when you was a baby, your mama had to put a pork chop around your neck to get the dog to play with you. This is the United States going to Israel with, well, not a pork chop, but like a brisket around our neck.
No, it is so disgusting. I can't even believe you just told me that. I mean, you got to start wondering what really is going on. Because it's just so... That's, like, bizarre. That's very bizarre, actually. It don't even make any sense.
Do you remember that video that was shot where? Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, maybe? It was outside a nightclub with all the little young, drunk Israelis talking about that disgusting Shvatza president?
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, it's just sort of like... Well, listen, you know that what I sent you today, this sort of... that whole thing with who he wants to pick... to replace Summer?
Yeah, that wasn't inspiring.
Well, no, what I'm saying, though, is that they're not friendly enough. They're not perceived as being friendly enough.
Well, where did this trope come from, Sandra?
Well, no,
that the Obama administration isn't friendly to business.
No, but it's so damaging to the progressive message, though, Bob. This is the bigger picture here. This fool keeps doing these damaging right-wing policies, and he lets himself be called, like I said, nigger, Muslim, socialist. So what that does, it sort of casts these horrible policies in a progressive framework. I don't mean what other progressives will see, but what the American people will see. They'll look at Obama. He's a progressive, and yet I'm still unemployed throughout my home. Is this what progressive means? You see what I'm saying? It's really bad. He is turning out to be horrific in the long term if you look at liberal progressive policies that have, like, turned this country around.
Oh, I know. And
what,
you know, you'll see some discussions if you wander around in liberal land of people getting really frustrated and saying, you know, listen, it's finally time that we think about running a primary opponent against Barack Obama. And I just thought about that earlier today, and I thought, you know, wait, we're going to find some liberal to run against Barack Obama when the right wing has already cast him as the most god-awful liberal since Joseph Stalin.
That's what I'm saying. This is why this is so becoming... such an ordeal and a nightmare for our side. I'm sorry. I really don't mean to be completely nihilistic about this, but this is a bad process that he's doing, actually. The sort of, you know, he's not fighting back and saying anything. So everything that he does can be framed any kind of damn way that the majority media wants to. Like, for example, how many days has it been since the election? This man should have been out every day pounding away at what the Republicans want to do with this tax cut. He wouldn't have hurt himself at all. Every day, pounding, pounding, pounding. Every day.
Well, isn't that what the bully pulpit's for, Sandra?
Exactly. Every day, pounding, pounding on his unemployment, saying, do you realize that 2 million people will be without an income soon? Every day this should be going on. What are we getting, Bob? We're getting...
crickets.
We're getting Saturday chit-chats about ear fucking marks. This is what President Bush is talking about. Earmarks. I'm about to poke my eye out of an ear. Earmarks?
Earmarks.
I mean, I don't mean, you know what I mean? I realize that I constantly go on about Obama when I talk to you on this show, but it's stunning to me, and this is the main reason why, because progressivism is being destroyed with this man.
There won't be any. There won't even be a little greasy spot to wipe up.
I don't know. You know. I mean, I'm sure. Maybe I'm just overblowing it, but I'm just kind of.
No, I sincerely don't think you are.
You know, I'm starting to get really worried here. You know, about if we want to talk in terms of brand, I'm getting really worried about the progressive brand because he continues. They call him all kinds of socialists. I mean, just the other day, the head of Fox is calling him some sort of socialist lefty. You know, they keep that meme going, and there's no response back.
No messaging. No clue about messaging, Sandra.
And it's just really bizarre, and it's just starting to...
Oh, and what was what you were talking about, were you talking about that the Roger Ailes interview?
Yeah.
Ailes says that Obama is a socialist. This quote just blew me out of my chair. It's an interview with, of all people, Howard Kurtz, you know, who lectures us on journalistic ethics.
God.
But this is a quote. The president has not been very successful, the Fox News chairman says in a lengthy interview. He just got kicked from Mumbai to South Korea, and he came home and attacked Republicans for it. He had to be told by the French and the Germans that his socialism was too far left for them to deal with. He just has a different belief system than most Americans. Sandra, did I miss the part where Barack Obama came home and started blaming Republicans? Because I would have been dancing in the street if he had.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And it's just no response back. And speaking of the South Korea thing, it's like damn Skippy. The South Koreans, these agreements that the U.S. have with people, for example, capital controls are illegal. If you have an agreement with the U.S., you cannot stop capital going in and out of your damn country. The South Koreans said, no, we ain't doing that. That is one of the main reasons why Obama had his ass handed to him about that agreement. Because the South Koreans are like, well, no, we're not going to completely...
Well, look where the Irish are right now.
Oh, don't get me started on that one. That is off the charts.
The Irish say, we've got enough money to last till spring.
No. See, that's coming to a theater near the UK and us if we embrace this shit. Incredible.
But what I found interesting is that as soon as Ireland hit the radar and started being talked about, somebody else piped up and said, well, we can't talk about Ireland if we're not talking about Portugal.
Well, Portugal's in deep shit. That country's been in trouble for a while. And the contagion, this is what they're going on about. You know, they're all upset because Merkel had the nerve to suggest that maybe the bondholders and the creditors need to sort of share in this just a little, please. And everything went to hell when she made that comment. Her mistake was she's talking about down the road 3 years. Okay, you can't do that.
Well, I read that. What I found fascinating is in reading the story about the Irish, there was this little paragraph that said something about holding back the speculators. You know, that in fact the problem lies in the speculation. Somehow, you know, speculating in the bond market is what precipitates a lot of this trouble. And once again, you know, speculation, Sandra, is it just me, or is that just a fancy Wall Street word for gaming the system?
Well, yeah, and the thing about Ireland that's really sad is that they should have let that bank fail. That was their mistake. You know how they're, you know, how some situations you need to nationalize the bank, other times you just need to let it fail, or you can bail them out. This case, they should have let that fail.
Well, what's the, okay, work with me real quick. What's the difference between letting a bank fail and letting it fail? And, I mean, does Ireland have something like the FSLIC and the FDIC in place where mom-and-pop depositors are protected?
They have something. I think they have something in place to protect basic deposits. I'm not, you know what, I'm not too sure exactly what it is. But most Western banking systems do. But a lot of the U.S. is one of the places where there's layers of divisions. It used to be a lot more with Glass-Steagall. Whereas in Europe, they have universal banking. Like, they can buy shares and equity. You know, they can actually buy stocks. We can't do that here. So there is some differences going on there, but the problem with the Irish banks is that they just put all the debt onto the people completely.
Well, that's what was kind of blowing me away, was they hung the Irish proletariat, so to speak, out to dry, what, 2-3 months ago?
And it's been going on for years, though, this austerity, and it's not working. It's just, you know, making everyone poorer, and the creditors keep expecting and demanding to be made whole. I don't know if you've seen these spreads. If you know, the bond yield is like over 8%. No country can pay back that sort of debt with that kind of spread. Like, to compare, ours is like 0. I don't know what. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
8%, Bob.
Yeah, when you're hitting that 8% number, you're talking about I mean, those are the kind of percentages that
it's not. You can't pay it back. I mean,
no.
You know, the thing is, I kept thinking about,
that's a consumer's 20% credit card.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not sustainable. I keep thinking about back in, you know, a long time ago when they had the debt jubilees. You know, they do that shit regularly in ancient times, and it's for good reason. You know?
General forgiveness of debt.
They ain't never had that going on here. This world is so in desperate need of a jubilee. I mean, worldwide.
Yeah, don't look for the church is a little busy with demons right now, so don't look for that from them anytime soon, Sandy.
Oh no, I know, but you know what I mean. These we talked about this before. The sort of, I don't know what I said it was. I think it's like 400 zikadrillion. You know, the derivatives market worldwide. It's just something that's astronomical, which can never be repaid. But all this is being used, you know, you have to go, did you read the Shock Doctrine?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it, because they're using it now. They want to destroy the welfare state. This is what it's all about in Europe, for real.
You know, I laughed when I saw a thread on a board, I guess it was last night, and I didn't exactly, and it was meant to take me by surprise, Sandra, but the thread on the board said, unemployed girl to marry soldier from welfare family. I went, what? And I opened it up, and it was a story about the wedding of what's her name and Prince William.
Oh, I know, but it's interesting about that, how that like made a ripple for about a second. Anybody give a shit about that? Don't care. I thought that was interesting.
Well, but it's so true. Unemployed girl to marry soldier from welfare family.
Oh, I know. I saw that headline too, and it's just like, oh. I guess they had to roll that out because, you know, they're going buck wild in England with the cuts. It's really astonishing what's going on there.
And this, you know, I saw another mention of that this is going to be tied to some sort of looking for non-existent imaginary work.
That's just awful. Yes, yes. It's incredible what they think.
And what that is, Sandra, is it's little more than enforced humiliation of people who are receiving public benefits.
Well, that's what they've been doing in the United States.
I've been on unemployment. And
yeah,
every week you have to go in and say, I look for work here and here and here and here.
Yeah, well, no, I was on, years ago on welfare, and the things that you have to do for, I think it was like $160 a month.
Yeah, you have to abase yourself.
Oh, it's just hideous, you know. I mean, I just think that the conservatives over there, they're going to be in for a rude awakening, because even in England, as low-key as they are, I can see them hitting the streets.
Well, how long until buyer's remorse sets in?
Oh, it's already there. I was talking to a friend of mine. She just said, yeah, this shit is well out of control. But anyway, listen, I'll let you go, but I have to ask you, so, I guess Michael Vick, what happened?
You know, he's up for sainthood now, right?
I know. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, it's amazing what winning would do for your ass. And
But he's kind of behaved himself along the way, hasn't he?
Well, he got some sense in his head, yeah. I think it's quite amusing, but, you know, all these sort of, these crackers on the radio, they struggling. They trying to, you know what I mean? They just really like, oh, God.
Oh, they're dying for a picture of him with a kitten or something.
Oh, you know, it's just kind of, yeah, they really have to kind of backtrack a little bit.
But that was brutal Monday night.
Shit, he fucked that up. It was crazy. But on the other hand, then you got the Donovan McNabb situation. So, hello? Is Washington Redskins like the Oakland of the East Coast now? What's going on?
Look, with the Skins, you got to look to the coaching staff.
Well, that rat, I never liked him anyway.
I mean, he screwed up, he wants another Elway.
Yeah, that's the only time he had some success, wasn't it?
Yeah, he got inside Cutler's head and turned him into a head case. Ran Jake Plummer plumb out of the NFL, I think.
Okay, but he basically said this Donovan McNabb was out of shape and stupid.
Yeah, and yet they're probably going to re-sign him.
But he did. He just got $40 million guaranteed money. But anyway, you know, so Shanahan is another one of them ones that's hella overrated, because he don't know. I don't know what he's doing.
No, I'll take that thug in New England, that cheating bastard, any day of the week.
Oh, that shit. That fool can coach. That's for sure. I'll give him credit for that.
I mean, humiliated Pittsburgh.
Yes. Well, I don't, you know, I look at that team, that rapist throwing football, and I'm like, ugh.
They were a much better team before he came back, I think.
I think so, yeah. Oh, God. Well, I had something else I wanted to tell you that was funny, but it left my...
Well, my beloved Mountaineers screwed up in one big last Saturday, so I'm down to rooting for the next three losses.
Oh! Who they got left? I mean, how many more games are left? Like four?
Three. Okay. We've got Rutgers, Louisville, and Pitt.
Well, how's Rutgers this year?
Rutgers could do us.
And Pitt?
Pitt could do us. And frankly, Louisville on a good day downhill with a tailwind could do us.
Well, what?
But the thing is, if it doesn't happen, I get 3, 4, 5 more years of these 4 or 5 win. Inexplicable loss season, or five loss inexplicable seasons.
So you just need a new coach?
Badly.
Okay, so you want more losses so they can just bounce his ass, right?
Yeah, because he's got three.
Oh, God. So.
And I need two more at least.
And you think that really will send him on his way?
That's the rumor. That's the rumor.
What do you think of Berkeley's performance? They was like going for the Academy Awards all around.
it was gorgeous. I tell you what, the one that grabbed me from last Saturday was all the drama around Cam Newton and watching him come out and just he disassembled Georgia.
No, you must be in heaven looking at that whole situation. That shit is funny as hell. And you know
Well, no, the FBI's apparently involved now.
I understand, but they probably praying they can't run the table because they want that off the television, that whole story. Because that kid has so much confidence. He don't seem to give a F. It's kind of funny.
Well, I went from watching the Mountaineer game to watching that Auburn-Georgia game, and it was like going from watching Pop Warner to watching NFL.
Oh, damn. Well, Oregon's pretty nice to watch. They kind of had a different level, too.
Yeah, you see, I hate the East Coast football bias because, for instance, it was a couple of weeks ago when I could have been watching Oregon, and I wound up having to watch Ohio State and God knows who.
Oh, no, you know what? That's tedious. I'm telling you, Oregon is, that's some...
No, Oregon's like watching a track, they're like watching a track meet.
Yeah, no, that's some good watching. I don't know what to say about, is it Trussell?
Trestle, yeah.
Yeah, that shit is hella, yeah, that's boring. That is.
I mean, I can't, and then I saw that score, the one that just slayed me, though, is I was watching the boards go by on the crawler, and I thought, you know, okay, somebody hit the wrong key. Wisconsin 83, Indiana 20.
Wow. Hello? Oh, see, now that's not right. How can they let them games go on? Oh.
At some point you gotta invoke the Pee Wee League rule. You know, this is enough. Please.
For sure.
And I don't even know when the 20 were scored. That's the thing. Because I didn't see any highlights of that game because it would have taken up the better part of Sports Center. 83 points?
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I oh my God. Well, no, because you know I've been so busy, I haven't really had a chance to like spend some time with football.
11 touchdowns and 11 extra points. That's 77, right?
How do you get that much in the time? That's in the time allotted. Wow.
I mean, is my math on the fly failing me? 80.
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah.
11 times 7 is 77.
Right. Plus
6. Two. Plus 6.
Oh, okay, yeah, with a missed, yeah.
Right. So that was two field goals or a touchdown and they deefed an extra point? I don't know. But somebody at Camp Randall was aiming to make a statement.
That's a crazy. Oh God, let me ask you something right quick. Who is that quarterback from Texas? God, he's so gruesome. He's playing professional now.
Oh, which?
Colt
McCoy.
Who does he play for?
Offhand, I can't remember because I know Sam Bradford's with the Rams.
Oh, isn't he like forever hurt? That one.
I saw him playing on Sunday.
I think he's another one of them people who get hurt all the time.
Well, I just figured Colt McCoy wouldn't last very well because Colt McCoy, he's got all the, he's a stick.
Yeah, remember when he was crying? Oh God, he's terrible. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, take care, Sandra.
Bye.
Glad the phones worked.
Oh yes.
Later. Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Rick Goodner, horn psychotherapist, writing in about George Soros. He says, George Soros, a longtime supporter of progressive causes, voiced blunt criticism of the Obama administration, going so far as to suggest that Democratic donors direct their support somewhere other than the president. How do you not? How do you not? If you're a liberal, you know, a real one. Marty also noting Colt McCoy's with the Browns. And it's Matthew Stafford at Detroit who's hurt all the time. Jesus. Oh, God. And, Marty was a little upset with us for us dissing the mastermind from Denver. Jesus. I've got some audio. It's a little bit here. No, it takes too much time. I'm just glad to have phones back. Let's go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, stranger. It's been a while.
It has been.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Hello to everybody on the horn. This is Elaine.
Otherwise known as Solo Pocono in the chat room.
Yeah, I love Sandra. My son has listened to her now. My 85-year-old dad listened to her now, and they're like, who is that woman? She is smart.
I would, but it's that way. It's that way with so many. That's the glory of the horn, Elaine, is that I get to have interactions with people that I'm pretty sure are a good 10 to 15 IQ points sharper than anybody inside the White House or the Congress.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that ambition is not the same as brains when it comes to getting elected to public office.
Well, Bob, you keep shocking me with your knowledge of ancient Greek civilization and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, oh my God, I can't remember any of that stuff anymore. And you just rattle it off, you know, everything from early American history to ancient Greek, you know, mythology and history and architecture.
It's just a function of being absolutely geeked about that stuff, Elena, because there's a ton of stuff I can't do.
Well, I think you know what my specialty is, and I couldn't resist calling in. First of all, Sandra was wondering where the antipathy to Soros is coming from on the right. It's because of Soros. It's all because of the funding on the left. Beck has made a point of all but saying that he has been able to do what Karl Rove never could. He destroyed Acorn. And anyone that comes out and speaks out about Bekenstein is going to get pummeled on the show. Soros made the mistake of making a public appearance a year ago or so and calling Beck a nutcase. And between that and the fact that, you know, funding organizations. It's strange, though. He's been accusing, Beck has been accusing all the commenters and writers on Media Matters for 2 years now of that we were all getting seven-figure salaries from Soros. I keep checking my mailbox.
You know,
have you checked yours? Because
every day, Elaine, and I have yet.
All the progressive media is getting paid by him, too. I want to know where the hell my seven-figure salary is.
I check the return address of every envelope that comes into my box, and I keep looking for George Soros or you know Soros Inc. or it ain't there.
Well,
I'm pretty sure that our friends and neighbors and stuff who do this, I'm pretty sure that Mike Malloy's not getting the George Soros check either.
Well, I asked Mike. I said, next time you have tea with George, could you please let him know that I'd love to have a talk with him. You know, as far as funding progressive media, I guess secretly you guys are getting rich.
it's so secret that it's a secret to me, Elaine.
I know. It's a secret to everyone.
You know, that's what it is. Agnes is grabbing the checks, and she's going out and doing all that high living.
Yep, just like a woman. Yep.
I never would have dreamed, but there it is. It's the only explanation.
But you hit the nail on the head earlier tonight when you talked about Beck and his Mormon thing. For anyone who hasn't yet, all you have to, if you go on YouTube, there are recordings of, what's the name, Ezra Taft and Glenn's guru, his Mormon fanatic fringe guru. My aunt and my cousin are both, I guess you'd call them mainstream Mormons, because they think that Beck is an absolute nutcase. And quite a few Mormons, according to them, agree with them.
But you know what? That's the problem with being mainstream, Elaine. You can say, well, you know, Beck's a nutcase.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's still speaking for you.
Yeah.
Until you make it clear that he doesn't. And until you build that internal structure that works against him, it's a matter of complicity. You know, the same thing applies to normal, and I'm not being facetious, normal Roman Catholics who don't distance themselves actively and constantly from people like Bill O'Reilly and Bill O'Donohue.
Right.
You know, remember Bill O'Donohue from the Catholic League? He tried to get a man killed for making a chocolate Jesus.
Yeah,
because he had some chocolate bits, you know. Because we all know that Jesus he was like a Ken doll, you know. He was flat down there.
Yeah, no. Donahue was one of the reasons that my uncle left. Two, 3 months after he retired, and he'd been a bishop in South America, and he retired from the church, and he was sick and tired of it, and he had been doing some research and listening to Donahue, and he's like, This isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I've been practicing, building community centers down in the Andes down in South America, talking, he dealing with the Indians for the past 35, 40 years down in the Andes.
Yeah, but he was dealing with the Indians at a time when there was a church policy of liberation and of uplift of the poor, and that's all gone now. Because, you know, this meeting of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops made plain, Elaine, that they said it out and out. Our focus now is going to be abortion and traditional marriage.
Yeah. And my uncle is, my uncle is also, because he spent so many years down there in South America, he's been so exposed to this other completely different culture than we have up here. I mean, living in a mud hut up in the Andes for 30 years, you know, learning their ancient religions, learning about the Aztecs, I think I had told you once before, when I first moved here to PA and I lived and worked at a yoga ashram for 2 weeks, my uncle came and stayed with me for 3 weeks at the, not in my room, but he stayed at the ashram.
No, because given the time frame that you've described, he came up within the church at a time when Vatican II was making meaningful inroads toward dragging the church kicking and screaming into the 14th century.
Right.
And, I won't give him the 15th through the 20th, simply because we've still got that condom thing, that no women as priests thing. But Vatican II really did try to modernize and humanize the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to anybody, your uncle included, anybody who was working within that framework of justice and decency and humanity
and progressivism,
yeah, found themselves on the outside looking in a real hurry, starting with the ascendancy of John Paul II.
Right. No, that's when he passed away or was murdered or whatever the situation was. My uncle didn't even know about those theories, but he's educated himself quite a bit lately. He's become good friends with another one of Beck's enemies, arch enemies, the Reverend Jim Wallace.
Yeah, that's a good friend, yes.
And Reverend Wallace also, as soon as he came out and wrote a thing about Beck has done nothing but try to smear him and demonize him on every show he possibly can. And it shocks me. He's got this. You had me in stitches again. I was sitting in the dialysis chair yesterday.
Oh, Jesus.
Watching Beck's program about the Tower of Babel.
They're running that during dialysis, Lane? God almighty.
I don't have a choice, Bob. That's why I watch Beck every day. I'm in dialysis. I've got a 52-inch large screen TV right in front of me with two huge speakers. I've already gotten kicked out once, but they had to accept me back. Went through hell last year because of this thing. The nurses all, they literally abandoned their duties two of them now have converted because I showed them some videos of Ezra Taft and Cleon Skousen, and it's almost word for word what Beck is saying. And, I mean, you know, Cleon was predicting that, you know, the U.S., the Constitution was being torn to shreds, yada, 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 back in the 50s. And he was, you know, one of the members of the whatchamacallit group, the
John Birch Society?
Yeah, John Birch Society, the whole nine yards. Were they all Mormon?
No.
Some of them.
No, they were, their freakishness crossed a lot of lines.
But anyways, he was involved with that, and he was screaming and yelling that he was going to give it 3 years. He also goes on about everything I've predicted for the past 5 years has been true. Sound familiar?
It's one of the most recent, oldest dodges in right wing nuttery. It's the same thing with the Protestant apocalypticist Hal Lindsey. You know, he had the great Planet Earth in the early 70s.
Right.
And that didn't go down. And so he recycled everything in the late great Planet Earth and turned it into the 1980s, Countdown to Armageddon.
where the big bad boogeyman was the flailing dying Soviet Union. That didn't work out. He recycled it in the 90s, the New World Order, and then he recycled it again, and now it's the Muslims.
Exactly. You know, you mentioned that like 2 months ago on one of your shows, and I stayed up because I had to listen. That was one of the days that I didn't get home from dialysis until 8 o'clock at night. And so I listened to your show after Mike's show and stay up and listen to it. But at 3 a.m., even after you were over at 3 a.m., I stayed up for the rest of the night and into the next day because I had totally forgotten. It has been, 30 years since I read the late, great Planet Earth. And there's been so many.
Oh, you pulled it out?
Huh?
You pulled out the late, great Planet. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I found a copy of it online.
But
I went through it because...
That didn't make your brains come out, your toenails or nothing?
Well, there's been so many of these Christian apocalyptic, I mean, between the Left Behind series and all these other things that have come out over the past 30 years with the Moral Majority and all these, you know, the apocalypse is coming any day now. We're all going to, you know, hop on Jesus' sleigh and take off into the clouds.
Behind the reindeer. Don't forget the reindeer.
Yeah. But there's been so many of them that I can't keep the dang thing straight. And
well, don't feel bad about it, Elaine. Nobody else can either. That's how the whole damn dodge works.
And it's insane. And all these different theories. And like you said, this guy, every 10 years, he updated his theory to match his new prediction. Everything I told you came true in the last 10 years, so this is going to happen next. It will be the apocalypse in 10 years.
And nobody ever calls him on it.
I know. It's amazing.
I don't know if William Crystal is an extension of that factor or that factor is an extension of William Crystal. You don't even have to be factually correct.
No. Well, facts don't matter anymore. And I got into an argument. I think I had written you about because of this thing with dialysis. Because I'm exposed to Beck's show 4 days a week that I get to watch because I'm on the late shift in dialysis, and I don't have a choice. There's only one other patient, and democracy rules. And even though two of the nurses now have pretty much, once I showed them about, they're strict Catholics, and once I showed them about the Mormon stuff, and they went and talked to the local priest, they still believe what Beck says about political things, but, you know, that they're hesitant to believe everything he says. Let's put it that way. And they're not as nasty to me as they were for a year before that. The only people that I have been able to talk, get away from Beck, the only people that I have been able to show the truth to who have accepted facts right in front of their face have been, it's been because of the religion.
Appeal to their essential bigotry.
You have to appeal, especially Catholics, because the Catholics are the first people.
No, Mormons hate Catholics,
right.
Unless they're teaming up to make sure that two guys can't get married.
Yeah, well, when John Hagee was one of the keynote speakers at Beck's Divine Destiny thing right before his 828 rally, his religious revival that he had the night before. Hagee was one of his two or three keynote speakers, and that convinced a good friend of mine that I had been talking to and showing her facts. But you can show these people facts. That fact is wrong because Glenn said this.
Right, because that is why, Elaine, and I've taken a little grief for this. That is why I maintain that the most dangerous word in the English language is believe.
Yeah.
Because as long as you say you believe something, facts don't matter.
Right.
You know, I believe that food fell from the sky for 40 freaking years. Never mind that it didn't. Never mind that it's physically impossible. I believe it. That settles it. You know, there's bumper stickers all over the South on rattle-trapped old cars and everything up to Cadillacs and Hummers that say, and this is the quote, "God said it, I believe it,
that settles it.
Right. Oh, I've seen them.
Well, I know. Sure, right, yeah.
Speaking of cars, I don't know if, you know, I'm up in Northeast PA, right?
Yeah.
I thought this was, I mean, I understand the stuff with the Confederacy, but the extreme Northeast corner of PA on Saturday nights at 2 a.m. on Main Street, up and down the road in front of my building, those damn horns that I used to hear down in Alabama. Exactly. It's like,
yeah, it's the General Lee horn.
Where am I living? I'm living up in the extreme Northeast, and you've got these.
Well, it's like the story. It's like the story I had out of State College, Pennsylvania, yesterday. You know, a couple. They're both veterans. They're both former Marines. White woman, black man, go to see the Michigan Penn State game, and have to listen to the Penn State alums call the woman a nigger lover for four solid quarters of football on tickets that cost them $500.
Oh my God!
You know, that's State College, PA. But yeah, the racism that's only in Alabama and Tennessee and Mississippi.
No,
not hardly.
Bob, I lived in Alabama for 8 years. I never saw anything like I've seen up here. I spent most of my life in Tallahassee, lived in Huntsville, Birmingham. I've never seen anything like the county I live in, there's less than a handful of colored people, black, brown, you name it. I mean, there might be a few hiding out up at the ashram, but they don't leave the ashram.
Yeah, because they're smart.
Well, during the summer, it's a little bit different because we get the city people from New York that come in here. But so mixed races, because you've got all the merchants out. You know, we've got sidewalk things and arts and crafts sales and all that kind of stuff almost every weekend. But during the winter, when everybody leaves, no. The people stay where they know they should stay. I know the one family that does.
Yeah, because everybody, because all the rednecks are out on Main Street with their General Lee horns going to let that. Right.
I've never seen, I mean, living down the South as long as I did, I've never seen anything like this before. And I went through the early 70s in high school in Tallahassee in segregation. But nothing like I have seen up here. The racism is just, it's disgusting. The things that these people say. Anyways, I can't stay on too long, but I did want to tell you, today there is a new conspiracy.
Oh, yes?
It's a progressive communist conspiracy. Because
I didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
What are we doing? What are we doing this week?
Well, it's the...
are we collapsing the banking system?
No, it's the TSA.
Oh, it's our fault that people are getting groped.
Yep, because Obama hasn't come out and said a word about it, and he's doing it purposely to rise...
Well, he's going to have a beer with the TSA screeners. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. That's bad.
He's going to... No, it's you know, part of this one, I guess it's another part. I don't know. Our 100-year plan that began, you know, what, a year and a half ago, that Glenn announced the progressive 100-year plan to destroy the country.
And that's why he had to have a, like, 200-year plan?
Well, it's changed every 3 months. His followers don't seem to...
Well, they don't count real good, Elaine.
No, they don't. But the conspiracy has changed quite a bit.
You know, but Emery and Eileen have their little Beckerhead Advent calendar on the wall, and there's another day on the 100 years, honey. And they X it off just like little kids waiting for Christmas.
It's amazing. I have never, and it scares. But yeah, the latest conspiracy, and I was once again. I didn't have dialysis today. I've got to go tomorrow, so I get to watch tomorrow. He's going to have a. Just so everybody will know, his whole program tomorrow is on long-term food storage.
Another Mormon dodge.
Yeah. Anyway, So tomorrow's whole show.
You poor thing. I don't mean that derogatorily. My heart just bleeds for you. I mean, I can't. Dialysis 4 days a week is tough, and nobody should. I mean, to do that while watching Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
Well, you know, why not stand on your head with your head in a bucket while you're at it, Elaine?
I've tried all the headphones I can afford, believe me. You know, the thing is you learn to take it with humor.
But I mean, like, high blood pressure's not good for dialysis, is it?
No, luckily I have low blood pressure despite my kidney failure. So my renal failure is part of the genetic disorder that I have. But anyways, and so is low blood pressure. There have been times. There was a show that he had on. This is something else. I mean, I'm sure that you know that he's, you know, not only told people to pack up their stuff and leave their churches because of the social justice and how horrible, you know, it is to help other people or be told to help other people or whatever. He's told parents. He's had quite a few shows where he's had parents yelled at parents, take your kids out of the public schools, homeschool them. Take them out of the schools.
Right, teach them all about when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, only give them the books that Glenn, you know, that's when you talk to these people, but he's got 50 pages of bookmarks. They all refer back to his Mormon book collection. You know, there's no, if you go to the, I've got a friend down in D.C., she's a constitutional attorney, my foster sister, and we went over the health care bill together, and for 3 days straight, during that whole weekend it was going through Congress, we went each article at a time, because I'll be danged if I know how to do that. But anyways, you know, I've talked, Kuhn goes down to the, she doesn't go by that name anymore, but I call her that. But that's her real name. But anyways, she goes down to the National Archives and tries to show other people in her community that have become caught up in this Becca, whatever you want to call it, this phenomenon.
Beccapalooza.
And, I mean, you've got to admit that the man is amazing. I would love to have somebody do a psychological study on this and how he is able
to... I'd just like to watch him on acid. And see how much difference that is between him and his reality. I want to see him talking about the Tower of Babel when the Tower of Babel starts talking back.
Well, he's going to have the Jewish, the Abramoff rabbi on again.
Oh, Rabbi Rabbit?
Rabbi Rabbit, the Abramoff felon thing. He's going to be...
And I didn't mention that, but yeah, Rabbi Lappin is one of the scoundrels who was active with Jack Abramoff. And I didn't even know you could do that to a Bram.
Well,
never mind.
I've given up. I mean, the guests that he have, he took David Barton out of complete, you know, by the time Barton went on to Beck's show and started back with his Reconstructionalist revisionist history of the U.S., and what surprises me, though, is that Barton will sit there and with other Christian ministers and listen to Glenn's going on about the lost tribe, about the Native Americans being the lost tribe of the Jews. They don't say,
Well, they can't.
99% of their DNA is Asian.
The DNA studies have been done. Everything that Joseph Smith read through his seeing stones in the bottom of his hat...
was a bunch of crap.
Was a bunch of baloney.
He got a hold of some damn good peyote somewhere.
Well, but... no, I think it was just bad moonshine. Crap will rot your brain.
That's true. He was a drunk, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
It's like being able to recognize the story of Virgil's Aeneid.
Right.
In the dumb business about Jared leaving the Tower of Babel.
Right.
You know, that's one of the... soapbox moment, Elaine. But that's one of those frustrating things about not teaching the classics anymore. The reason that that stuff resembles the Aeneid is because back then the educational system was predicated on reading the classics.
Right.
But no more.
God, I thank God my kids are educated and well-cultured and can...
But, the trick is to keep your eye out for this stuff.
Well, what it's doing to this country, personally, and I think I told you about that blog. I turned over almost all the research that I could get from my dead hard drive that I've done over the past 2 years on proving Beck all of his theories and his indoctrination and this, that, and the other. I turned it all over to a guy. He's a journalist for the Syracuse Examiner, Victor Tiffany. And he writes the Glenn Beck Review. Very eloquent writer. A lot more eloquent than I could ever be. And he takes this research along with his own research. He's able to get into, he's got a lot of media contacts. So he can get information that I can't get, and I can get information he can't get. We've come to the conclusion over the past 6 months or so, he is the most dangerous man right now, not only in America, but you do realize that he's got people writing into him from Argentina. His show is being broadcast by Fox or News Corp all over the world.
Right, because News Corp is willing to sit there and just hemorrhage money as long as they know that they are changing the global mindset.
Exactly.
Elaine.
And they make it available on all basic beach. Cheap, free, or inexpensive.
Right. Fox is always available on basic cable, but you've got to buy the next tier up to get MSNBC.
Right.
CNN. Or maybe CNN.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Well, Elaine, good luck with the dialysis tomorrow. Good luck with it ongoing. I hope they change the channel. I just really do. I want them to change the channel.
Bob, I've been trying for 2 years. I'll call back another time, but there was one show that he had on a couple of months ago or a month or so ago that really, really bothered me. I wanted to tell you about that. He showed a clip from a horror movie, a teacher blowing up children and actual brains and body parts flying everywhere.
Oh, Jesus.
Said that's already happening in the UK and it's coming to the United States. This is what progressives want for your children. Take them out of school.
Oh God!
And people just need to.
Why
really
not just?
Be
why not just
aware.
Tell people? Why not just tell people to get their children lobotomies?
Well, we have got to educate people. Progressives, Democrats, liberals, whatever you want to call yourself, or libertarian. I don't give a dang what you are. You need to know what this man. He has got over 30 million viewers a month, listening to him, watching him, reading his books, and he is the. We've got people that were just elected into Congress that believe every word that comes out of Glenn Beck's mouth.
Depressing.
People keep your eyes open. Be aware of what's happening. Know what's coming. This guy is trying to start something through the back door, and he's blaming it all on us. So he's even got my dad scared to death.
So that hopefully one of these days they can come for us.
Well, he's got my 85-year-old dad. My dad broke down and watched a couple of his shows recently, one on school food service, because that was another one that we got to laugh together during the whole show, considering my dad used to head up the school food service for the whole state of Florida, and Becca's saying, this has never been done before. And my dad's like, yeah, did Reagan had me doing that back in the 80s.
Yeah, back in the ketchup is a vegetable 80s. Oh, my God.
But anyways, he's got my dad scared to death. My dad looked at him. He called me up 2 weeks ago. He said, Elaine, this guy and Fox News Corp, whatever you want to call it, they're turning this country. This is the 30s in Germany. And they're blaming
Funny how older people seem to have the ability to recognize that. Again, the failure of teaching history. You know, like when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor and Lewis and Clark discovered Florida. There's where your homeschooling goes.
It depresses me sometimes. Then I keep thinking, well, he's getting so completely ridiculous, so completely off the wall, like yesterday with the Tower of Babel, today with the TSA being a communist plot to cause an uprising. You know, some of the, I mean, these theories, and they change daily. One of these days, and there are people that are leaving his quote-unquote flock, but more people are getting frustrated. More people are becoming unemployed.
Ignorance and fear.
Angry.
Ignorance and fear are the most easily leveraged emotions in the human psyche.
And he says that it's us that's doing that.
Bingo.
It's not. It's us.
Elaine, have a wonderful evening, dear.
You too.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Can you imagine that? That's Elaine calling from Pennsylvania. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine sitting there doing dialysis and watching Glenn Beck? How is, I mean, I don't want, how is that not medical malpractice? How is that not the intentional infliction of emotional distress during something as serious as dialysis? Jeebus. Going back to the phones in just a second, couple of pieces of mail. Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner adding, we've got to stop running from the liberal name and show them how badly a liberal can kick their ass. Wouldn't you love to see somebody look at Glenn Beck and say, you miserable bastard, I'm a liberal, and I'm not going to tolerate you doing what you do. That's why Glenn Beck never leaves his studio unless he knows he's facing a friendly audience with a Katie Couric or a Matt Lauer or maybe George Snuffleupagus over at Good God Morning America. Because he knows not to ever get himself in that place where he gets Edward Murrowed. Because that's when it would all fall apart. He just stays in his little spider hole at Fox. Email coming in from Kate up in Montana at this point. She says, time for my monthly rant about the horn going dark and the mic going cold. It's a fair bet that we are nowhere close to the funds needed for the month of November. That's not even a bet. That's the absolute truth. I would like to remind folks, says Kate, to reconsider their shopping list for Thanksgiving dinner. A $5 or $10 contribution would go a long way to pay the equipment and power bills. The past few days without live programming serves as a reminder of what it would be like some night when there is no more horn. I would remind folks that the stress that financial issues is likely to be taking a toll on Bob and his family. Is this fair? We sit here every night and let him do all the work. Not! Isn't it the season for Thanksgiving and gratitude? Please dig a little deeper, Kate says. The lottery ticket, a 12-pack, an extra pumpkin pie, an unnecessary trip to the store, maybe one less toy from China under the tree. Many of us are strapped, but there is nearly always a few dollars if we look for them. Someday the horn will go dark if we don't all pitch in and express our gratitude to Bob and all the folks who keep it lit. Thank you, Kate. It is stressful because the bills come due all month long. And then this from Corey in Louisville. He says, I checked my finances, and I want to officially announce this right now. I'm stating publicly that I will donate $1 to the horn for the margin of victory Louisville lays on West Virginia. The way I see it, it's a win-win situation. Bob gets money, the horn gets money, West Virginia gets a new coach, and we, Louisville, are bowl eligible. There are no losers here other than Coach Luther, but then again, he doesn't need to participate in any games to be a loser. He can just stand there and keep losing. Some things you need to know, says Corey. We lost to South Florida, a team we should not have lost to when we couldn't get 6 inches on 4th and inches in overtime. Our guys aren't happy right now. 2, it's our senior day. These seniors have gone from signing with an Orange Bowl winning squad to get in Cragthorpe and now may get to a bowl for their first time ever. 3, Cincinnati is horrible and WVU beat them pretty badly at home. Cheer for the boys in black. It hasn't been officially announced, but we will be in black that game to take out their South Florida frustrations on WVU. Yeah, I know I'm pretty heavy on the sports, but and this is important. Pay attention, you sports haters. I know I'm pretty heavy on the sports, but when you live in a place surrounded by teabagging idiot morons who put a worse senator than Jim Bunning in office, and your other senator wants to see the president and by proxy the country fail and be integral in making sure that some of the poorest states like his own not get the federal assistance it needs to stay above water, and where any and all attempts to raise revenue in the state house die because the Senate majority leader has revealed himself to be a teabagger, hell, wouldn't you talk sports too just to get through the day and not jump off a bridge or something? Signed, Corey in Louisville, who has a very outside shot of actually going to the U of L WVU game on Saturday. Every point in the margin of victory, Louisville over WVU, Corey is going to donate, contribute to the horn. And that's digging deep. That is digging deep. Another one who dug deep was our good friend Scott in Sweden. Who has initiated something entirely different from the regular horn fundraising. And he wanted me to make this clear. He says, hey, Bob, sorry to hear about the ongoing computer woes, including phones. Nonetheless, you're sort of missing the point of my additional $500 atop the one in the preceding month. This Beat the Swede challenge is earmarked for computer repairs. Earmarked. Pay attention. Earmarked. Earmarked for computer repairs. I want that to be my good deed for the year. I know you have a slew of other urgent bills, and I'm busting a nut to help, but I was hoping you could point out on air a little harder what I'm trying to do with my earmark. As I see it, it is time to get the hardware in order, as that is the core of the show. So just to make it clear what Scott in Sweden is saying with his Swamp the Swede challenge. I like Swamp the Swede better than Beat the Swede, because it's kind of alliterative. But call it what you will. Scott has ponied up $500 to get the computers fixed and take care of some basic equipment needs, and he's hoping that folks can kick in to make that happen so that there's actually a total of $1,000 to take care of all the computer needs and get stuff fixed going into the new year. And he says, I also realize how hard the Horney family worked on the poop tank, the solid gold septic system that fails, and there's probably a bit of burnout about yet a new project. So I really do not know what to advise, but the $500 is earmarked for fixing that other PC. And Scott had asked me, I told him, you know, $350 for the bare-bones stuff. So he said, no, make it $5. He said, because I predict that the real cost will exceed the expected, and I don't want you to have to dig in your own pocket for the remainder. I want my fellow listeners to pick up that part of the slack alongside me. And as he sits in Sweden looking back at his homeland, Scott says, it will always boggle my mind that a country as big as the U.S. with millions and millions of liberals and little old me is lugging the ball up the gut all out of proportion. I'm not about to quit the team, but my goodness, are all American lefties really that broke? You must have wondered the same thing and have long since torn out all your hair, which is, of course, why I've only seen pics of you with a hat on. I'm a real Dr. Watson, huh? So keep up the good work. I've got your back as best I can. And then Scott notes, good filibobster yesterday, but I know what the conversation part means to the show. So that's it, the Beat the Swede Challenge. The Beat the Swede Challenge. And this is not for ordinary monthly expenses. This is to get basic equipment stuff in order going into the new year. And gosh, it would be wonderful. It would be wonderful. And every bit helps. It really, really does. Great idea coming from Cindy in the Great Northwest. Can we get Elaine a TV be gone? She could use it and hide it and tell everyone she prayed that God would turn off Glenn Beck and he's doing it. TVBeGone.com. TVBeGone.com. Apparently it'll fit on a key ring, and it just makes televisions go off. Batteries included, ready to go. Is this high power universal remote control? Is this for real, Cindy? TVBeGone.com. Let's get back to the phones because we're fast running out of program. Let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Good.
No, you have no idea how freaking happy I am. The phones work.
Yeah, I heard that you're stuck filibustering yesterday.
Yeah, it was a little, and I was more or less prepared to go the 3 hours filibuster, but the fact of the matter was my bandwidth went down to, and so, you know, when I see the streaming software buffer up as hard as it did, I knew that wasn't nothing going to get better no time soon.
Yeah, since it's prayer meeting Wednesday, I was going to bring up the fact that God must love him some Marans, because he made so goddamn many of them.
Really? No breaking the mold there.
Oh, jeez. Where do these people come from?
Under rocks?
I was going to say, what rock do they crawl out from under? Unbelievable. Yeah, it was so refreshing coming on and hearing Sandra on there. She's a jewel. She really is. God. It's so nice to hear a voice of sanity every now and again. That's why I have to tune in every night. Recharges my mental batteries a little bit.
Well, you know, especially knowing where you are, and we're not telling any big secrets, you're in the deep south part of Florida, where the rednecks roam. Free range.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a little bit tough. You know, you're kind of like our good buddy David in South Carolina. Man, you're surrounded, and you're like Custer on the hill going, where'd all these Indians come from?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to close that distance. We've got to close that gap.
Well, you know what they call this part of Florida, right?
Redneck Riviera?
Well, that, but they also call it L.A.
Lower Alabama.
Yep-er.
It's one of my favorite places on Earth, Cossack. If we ever hit the lottery, I'm going to go over to Ono Island and build a mansion, and I'm going to broadcast live from the Florabama Lounge every night.
All right, I can live with that.
You know, we could have live coverage of the mullet toss every year. You know, assuming that the Gulf comes back to life.
That's a big assumption.
You know, ain't that the truth? Did you see the story the other day where the shrimp are showing up with hydrocarbons in them now?
Uh-huh.
You know, I get to the point of damn near crying when I read that stuff. I get so pissed off.
And that's what we keep on telling people. You don't, just because you don't see the stuff, it doesn't mean it went away.
Right, and well, I mean, coming from where you come from, Cossack, you know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a royal red, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the shrimp that are too damn big to ship. They're like snakes on a plate.
Right.
Only much tastier. And frankly, a big old stack of Royal Reds is my, you know, just before, you know, it's on my desert island list. It's on my bucket list. It's on my, right before, you know, they execute me for rape when I'm 99 years old list. You know, that's a really bad, bad, terrible joke that I'll get hateful email about. Those things are special to me.
Yeah.
Because back before it was all ruined, when they were fresh out of the Gulf, like less than 24 hours, and you steamed them, and you popped the heads, and you didn't need cocktail sauce, you didn't need butter, you didn't need nothing. You just needed to be able to get it from your hand to your mouth, and it was candy.
Yeah. Or like the oysters around here.
Oh.
Right around here. You know?
No, I need some oysters.
And
like I said, you know, the plan is to broadcast live from the Florabama Lounge.
You can't eat the oysters raw anymore because you can taste the damned oil.
Yeah, you know, somehow a raw oyster with a little bit of a little bit of 10W30 aioli just don't get it.
No. I mean, you can get away with frying them and baking them. That kills it to some degree, but raw oysters, not around here. No, no, no. That's just not going to happen anymore.
Mm.
And people don't realize this. They don't realize how crazy things are getting.
Well, see, that's one of those things. You know, we're coming up on the holidays, and we've got a few little traditions here, Cossack. And one of them is raw oysters on Christmas morning. And I guess I'm going to have to try to find them from up east or something, because they damn sure ain't coming from the Gulf.
I don't think so. And, you know, I have to agree with Sandra, what she was saying about Obama. He is ruining the whole concept of progressive. I mean, he is so far from progressive, it is not even funny. And yet, he is being typified as a socialist, a communist, a national socialist.
Oh, I had a note from Sandra just a couple of minutes ago. She said, oh, wait, what? They're blaming Obama for the TSA business? Maybe he'll speak out on that.
Oh, God. Oh, you heard they're prosecuting the guy who made that recording, correct?
Oh, yeah. Or they say they will.
Oh, they're investigating. They're planning on slapping him with an $11,000 fine.
Yeah, because it went up $1,000 while he was standing there. Jesus, criminy.
Right. Because he was...
But the thing is, it's not just him. If you've seen the other stories, I mean, this is the guy who said, you touch my junk, I'll have you arrested.
Right.
And you know what? That's not illegal to say.
No.
And frankly, if court cases weren't so damned expensive and lawyers so hard to find... You know, there ought to be... Where the hell is Gloria Allred? Jerry Spence guy, because those are the cases that lawyers who are already rich just yearn to go to court over.
Oh yeah.
Because you just let's do try this. But beyond that, no, I saw another story of a woman who has two special needs children.
Oh, God.
who was subjected to a genital groping. I saw a story from the TV station in Chattanooga about one of the reporters who was flying with his family, his wife and one little child, who got groped, and there's video of it, of the child sitting there screaming while the TSA agent puts her hands all over the baby, including the baby's genitals.
Well, you heard the... Did I mention that on my trip to D.C., I came under special handling?
No.
Yeah. I was going through the metal detector, and it beeped. And
yeah, two beeps and you're out.
Yeah, and they said, "What's that?" And I said, could be my knee braces. I have to wear knee braces. And they said, well, why can't you take them off? I need them to be able to.
Because I can't stand up without them.
Correct. So they have me sit there in public, in front of everybody. They tried to get me to pull my pants down, and I told them they could shove that idea. Ain't gonna happen. So I had to mangle my legs trying to get my pants up over my braces. They swabbed my braces.
Swabbed?
What? Yeah.
Like, because they wanted to make sure you weren't wearing exploding knee braces?
Correct. I mean, it's kind of obvious what they were.
What do you suggest? What do you suggest, Cossack, tonight? The scotch, the tequila, the vodka, or the bourbon, or the gin? There's gin. You can choose gin.
I'll go with the bourbon.
Yeah, I'm doing. I think I will too.
Jesus, I mean, how insane are these people?
No, it's how terrified they are. Terror, like I said in my conversation with Elaine, terror does terrible, terrible things to the human psyche.
But these people have gone.
But again, it's reactionary politics. Cossack, because, President not sure and his advisors know that the press release has already been written. I've already gotten it, as a matter of fact, that that Kenyan Muslim is not keeping us safe like George did. You know, John Fox just said all men should wear kilts to the airport. I'm with him, although I'm a little bit more radical. I still say, you know, this is one of those George Soros rich liberal moments. What we need is a series of flights all on the same day. Well, this will probably get me on somebody's list. We need a series of flights on all the same day, and we need some rich liberal to pay for all the tickets, and we'll just fly a round trip from point A to point B, and we will and buy enough tickets to fill the plane. Several planes. You know, like Frisco to L.A., the New York to Boston, Miami to Atlanta, New Orleans to Chicago, things like that. And everybody, the plane is filled, okay? And everybody shows up, the women in, and I don't care if she's 90 or 9, in bikinis and flip-flops, and every guy in a Speedo and flip-flops. It'll be humiliating, but, you know, we're all in this together, and nobody's going to laugh at anybody's overhanging pouch or whatever, because we're going to make a point, and we're going to humiliate the TSA.
Yeah. Well, and...
Because if they still feel like they need to do a genital grope when a guy or a woman is standing there in a bikini bathing suit, then at that point, we know that airline travel in the United States is done.
Yeah. Well, it's like I've been contending for years and years that if we're that bloody terrified, if we believe that much in security, then they should be selling airline clothing, which is shirt and pants made of
paper.
Made of transparent plastic. And men can only wear a as you said, a Speedo.
Or a jock strap.
Or a jock strap. And women can wear a bikini and nothing else.
Well, apparently John Fox thinks well of the idea. See, I call every day I call George Soros' office, Cossack. And I can't get him to take my calls.
But I thought he was supporting all of us.
Well, you know, it's only when Elaine pointed out that it was probably Agnes out there cashing my George Soros checks, and that's why I'm not seeing him. But if that was the case, we'd have a new trailer or something.
Exactly. I don't know. This is just insane. The left, there are wealthy people on the left, and they haven't gotten it through their heads that what we need more than anything else right now is a left-leaning media structure. And I don't mean just your station. We need an entire structure.
No. And you know why we don't have that, Cossack?
No, why?
Because, and it has to do with language. You see, the right wing says they're conservative, but there's nothing conservative about Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch and the Reverend Moon at the Washington Times, they don't care how much money those enterprises hemorrhage. They can bleed money forever. And the stockholders will say, well, that's okay with us.
Yeah.
Because they're right-wing ideologues, and they know that money is not an issue in this. Whereas if a liberal were to start a real, honest-to-God, left-leaning media infrastructure, they would demand that the damn thing make money. I mean, it happened with Ted Turner and CNN. He was sitting there, he was trying all kinds of brilliant, experimental, out there stuff, and well, Ted, when are you going to make some money? It's the liberal rich people who are actually the conservatives, Cossack. Because the right-wing rich people will burn herds of wet elephants with sopping wet $1 bills, $100 bills. And it takes a lot, and they don't care as long as it's doing what they want to do, because they understand that that is how you transform the mindset of the plebs.
Exactly. And it's pathetic. It's pathetic. We should have a left-leaning information structure out here, and we don't. There isn't anybody who's supporting Media Matters and Grit TV and The Horn. I mean, these outlets need to be supported.
Yeah, they do.
And, you know, we're doing the best we can out here, but we as church mice.
Oh, believe me, broker than the Ten Commandments is a financial status, not just a, not just a religious or legal one.
Correct.
You know, I grew up hearing a, phrase called poor as Job's turkey.
There you go.
And it was one of the first things that made me go read the book of Job. And I went, Mom, where's the reference to the turkey? There ain't one, son. That's why. That's how poor it is. So you get the idea. Cossack, it's awfully good to hear from you, brother.
It was good talking to you, Bob.
Take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from the Redneck Riviera, Lower Alabama, about a quarter before the hour. We're going to try to get through some more calls. Hey, welcome to the program.
There's worse words than believe. There's Nickelback in stores now.
In stores now. Oh, that's pretty odd. But that's a lot of words. That's not one word, David.
That's why I said words. There's worse words. But I do have to refudiate the Tower of Babel does exist. It's the Fox News headquarters, and it's spelled B-A-B-B-L-E.
Well, that's true too, and it's I think it's also the same building that's featured in the either the first or second Ghostbusters movie.
That's true, and we all know who Gozer is. That's Neil Cavuto. But anyway,
really, I thought Gozer was either Roger Ailes or Rupert Murdoch.
Well,
he played. I know he did play. He played shortstop on the Sodom team.
You're right. Neil Cavuto is Slimer.
There you go.
Yeah, I just wanted to briefly talk about the whole situation with Obama and basically sum it up to this: the fact that we did not prosecute anyone as a war criminal. Or we never even made an effort to do that, and the fact that we have Nancy Pelosi back as a leader, and she would still believes that impeachment is off the table, and she believes that there were no war crimes committed and so forth. I think that's pretty much just set up the progressive movement to go in flames, because we'll be thinking coulda, shoulda, woulda in a short enough time space here, because I'm telling you that really, what was the worst that could happen? I mean, the Republicans are going to tar and feather you, and
but they were going to do that anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. They're going to do that anyway. So what was the worst that was going to happen to you? They're already calling you radicals and socialists. What could they do? What could they do if
Antichrist?
Yeah, exactly. What could they do?
They're still saving Antichrist.
You know, the whole thing about and the other thing I wanted to mention was how no one really pays attention to this, but meanwhile, while we're talking about earmarks, I see all the Republicans are marching lockstep and going to all the media outlets talking about Social Security reform this week. Just nonstop talking points, Bob. Just a bombardment of this.
Because the Obama White House and the so-called Democratic so-called leadership allows the right wing to set the message agenda. We are in constant response mode and never in out front mode with our messaging.
I agree with you, and I think one of the main problems is the fact that when we talk about the whole issue of Social Security and the fact that we have to, that nobody brings up the fact that we're running out of money and Social Security is not going to be solvent, anyone that is being interviewed, anybody that is currently interviewing that Republican says, where did you get that from? They just let them run the talking points.
Right, because if you actually look at the numbers, Social Security's rock solid till 2037.
And see, that's what makes the Republicans so diabolical, Bob, because they're already setting it up that it's going to be the meanest fight you've ever seen on Social Security, because they're going to talk about it nonstop. They're going to talk about it nonstop till we're at that breaking point of, oh my God, we got to do something now. And that's where they make the really, really irrational decisions.
I think you're right.
And you know what? One last thing before I go, just to make this a humorous ending note. I saw the photo stills for Spider-Man on Broadway, and oh my God, does the Green Goblin look fabulous? So terrible. Can I tell you something? What is Marvel thinking, man? They're just wasting money, and they're just burning up money. They could have spent it on so many different projects, but yet you want to, I mean, as soon as you hear, what's your idea? Well, I want to hear at the pitch table. Okay, what's your idea? I got a great idea. It's Spider-Man on Broadway. No. Next idea. That's what they should have said. There should have been nothing. There should have been nothing. There should have been no arguments, but nothing. I mean, when you see Spider-Man, oh, and the worst part about it is wait till you take a look at Venom. Oh, my friggin' Lord. I have to tell you something, Bob.
I get the idea. You're not okay.
I know, but I mean, when you see the Green Goblin, he really does look like Bruce Valanche. I'm not quite. But what I'm saying is it is a long or Nathan Lane or something. I mean, they really did gay this musical up, and they think that all of a sudden the Spider-Man people are just going to run to it and be like, oh my God.
No. Easy there about gaying things up. We don't say that.
Okay.
But. No, frankly, you design a Broadway production for people who go to Broadway shows.
Mm.
I know there's a lot of people who love the musical Wicked, but if you compare that to the book, it's not the same thing.
I'm saying it's just a terrible idea. It's not going to translate well, and it's such a waste of money. And that's a big problem we have. Is we waste so much money in this country on things that we really, really need. It's just endless. I mean, and then you know what? Historians are going to look at us and laugh at us, and like they spend it on what? It's just another reminder, Bob. You know.
Another little signpost on the road to the apocalypse.
Right.
Indeed. Well, David, we will talk soon. You have yourself a wonderful evening. Thank you for waiting so long.
All right.
Later now.
Later.
Bye. It is awesome to have the phones back. A couple of quick emails. With regard to the TSA, Robert in Australia asking, regarding being x-rayed and groped getting on planes in the U.S., what's to stop it? Oh, dear. See, I'm going to get a visit. What's to stop a terrorist from detonating the bomb while being searched? Then everybody's afraid of airports. Where do you start searching then? The parking lot? Walmart? I added the Walmart part. But no, Robert, your query is well taken. And again, it's because we approach this from a position of fear and not of strength. Remember when Dem Leader said, if we don't do this, that, and the other thing, the terrorists win? Well, we did that, and because we did that, this, that, and the other thing, that's when the terrorists won. The terrorists won the minute that the Patriot Act was passed. The terrorists won when we started waterboarding and otherwise torturing people that we weren't even sure were guilty of anything. The terrorists won when senators and members of the House wet themselves running to eliminate the habeas corpus that had been enshrined in Anglo-American law since the 13th or 14th flippin' century. Because we are not willing to sit down and have a serious discussion about the fact that democracy is dangerous. Democracy will always be dangerous. Because everything else is autocracy. You see? Elaine just dropped me another note with regard to the fundraising email. She said, I don't usually want to say anything, but I was able to put $10 toward the horn yesterday. And I'd like to challenge anyone else that might be on Social Security if I can put $10 aside from my huge seven-figure, i.e. $700 a month check. So can everybody else. She says, I don't know what I would do without Bob and Mike every night. After dialysis, I'm usually starved for sanity. Listening to you guys, folks like Sandra, Cossack, John, Susan, everybody else, lifts up my heart and soul that there is sanity in this country. And no matter what Beck says, we surround them. Now if our Democratic leaders and president would just grow a pair. Signed, with love, Elaine, stuck for a while longer in Zombieville. Our good friend, Robert in Japan says, enjoyed your last caller, Elaine. Hope she gets transplanted sooner rather than later, having been on the donor side of that issue. Anyhow, question for the day. If there's a Beck Palin presidency in 2012, will you immigrate? When I listen to Beck, which is only for about 30 seconds, for that is about how long I can take it, he sounds more and more like a 21st century American Hitler. The last rant on the Jews and Soros, it seems that is more than a possibility. Cheers. Signed, Bob. P.S. Sandra for president. You getting this, Sandra? It may be time to form the exploratory committee. Would I immigrate? Beck Palin? I'd damn sure be willing. Maybe it's time I start working on my Spanish or my Japanese or my Canadian. See, I can't go to, and no offense to my Canadian friends, I can't go there. It's effing cold. And I mean, it's cool here in the hills already, and I don't like it. Maybe I can get a Berlitz Australian class or something. But see, the thing is, to immigrate, I have to prove that I've got a skill. Liberal talk radio host, I don't think, goes on the list. William just said, I hate to say this, but it seems this country is screwed. It's hard to resist that inclination. William says, we have no privacy. We were told we had to give that up with the Patriot Act, which is still in full force. The TSA cannot be trusted at all. I say this, make two lines, one for women, one for men, walk through, strip to the bare, and scan the clothes and put them back on before you exit the search. Personally, I don't fly on planes, says William. First, I haven't the money to do so, and second, it's not worth it. I was patted down in 1991 because I walked through the detector and it kept going off. Who knew the tin foil on a pack of cigarettes would set it off? You know, the same thing happened to me. I got segregated in Dulles on the way home from a D.C. trip one time. And I had just because I'd forgotten it, and I'm Scots-Irish and I can't throw anything away, I had one of those little traveling tubes of toothpaste, and it was in one of my jacket pockets, and I didn't know it was there. And who knew that plastic tubes of toothpaste were actually metal? I didn't. William notes his pat-down was a pat-down by a female in 1991, and she got pretty close to my junk. God, this country, this world. What a world, what a world, what a world. Can we get one more phone call inside of 2 minutes? Not that one.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Gene.
Well, I'm not so sure that immigrating would be the best thing, because I signed a petition because good old Mr. Murdoch is going to try and have a 100% stake in B-Sky B, which is there. He's already got the TV. But B-Sky B is their internet. They're one of their big internet providers. So, geez, the TV was bad enough that at least you could turn it off. If he gets hold of the internet in the UK, we're screwed. And of course, we're screwed. They're screwed. I might be screwed by extension. but I guess their culture minister is all into the two-tiered internet idea over there too. How thrilling.
Charming.
Excuse me while I rant. I just.
No, I understand. I understand.
I was going to tell you because I got a couple of really local, interesting news that I saw the other day. Our Carpenters Local Union is protesting Walgreens here because they've got contractors that are building Walgreens for under minimum wage.
I think Boss Man Wayne has been involved in some informational pickets at Walgreens constructions around here. Walgreens is notorious for it, Gene.
Yeah. There was a story in the local paper here where, they wanted some young kid, as a sex offender. Apparently they had underage sex with, like, maybe a couple of 15-year-olds or something. Although 21, that isn't that much older. But still, it's adult. So, but the thing that was really weird about that to me was, oh my goodness, that church they mentioned, that's all 4 blocks away from me.
Ooh.
Like, oh.
Ooh. Hey, Gene, I hate to do it, but I got to roll, brother. I'm a minute away.
All right. That's John. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that is News Ninja Gene calling from Oregon. Time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody. John Fox, Ben Birch, David in Tennessee, Reverbo, Matt Osborne, Lottie, our News Ninjas, Gene and Susan, Texas Betsy. Thank you all. And thank you all to every one of you who helps keep all of this going and shares your time with us. It's time for the Rick Smith Show, live from Pennsylvania. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, and always, always.